Before I get to a night of taking your calls about the Survivor Ghost Island season, let me take a moment and thank one of our sponsors, our friends over at True Car, because if you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with a term like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does that actually mean? Same goes for invoice, list price, dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car that you want, including the fees and the accessories, before you even get to the dealership. And a True Car dealer will show you the true price on a car like the one that you want, all from the comfort of your home. How do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car will show you what other people paid for the same car that you want, and your certified dealer knows this. So they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and I'm getting you ready for a feedback show of sorts that we are going to be doing here on Wednesday night. I'm going to be checking into our Rob's Podcast Facebook page, and I'm going to be doing a Facebook Live courtesy of BeLive.tv, where I am going to be taking questions from people who call in. So whatever the subject is, I just threw it out there, of Survivor 36 postseason podcast, call in with your thoughts on the season. I've got over 2.5 hours of calls that I took from the listeners of the podcast that you are about to hear on this episode of Rob as a Podcast. Before we get to the calls, let me just take a moment and thank one of our other sponsors here today. Those are friends over at canvaspeople.com. If you've been listening to Rob as a Podcast, you've been hearing me talk about canvaspeople.com. What are you waiting for to give it a try? It couldn't be easier. Just go to canvaspeople.com. Upload your photo, select the 11 by 14 size, and use that promo code RHAP to try it out for free. You just pay the shipping and handling. I did it myself earlier today on my phone. I got that Canvas People photo ready of Josh Wiggler and myself. Josh Wiggler was wearing the Wigglers Wombats hats, and it was the photo where they said, hey, find someone that looks at you the way that Dominic looks at Wendell. We recreated that photo. I uploaded it to Canvas People on my phone. Couldn't have been simpler. And I get that ready to go. Use promo code RHAP, selected the 11 by 14 size, and then it's going to be ready to go for Tyler Jacob Jones for winning the wand off. You should try it too. Everybody that I know that has used canvaspeople.com has been very happy with their purchase. It's a $69.99 value to get that 11 by 14 canvas photo for free. You just pay the shipping and the handling. It's going to be about $20. Give it a try. Go to canvaspeople.com and upload your photo. Select the 11 by 14 size and use promo code RHAP to get your customized canvas print that you're going to love having in your home for free. So here we go. Here is my conversation with the callers of Rob Has a Podcast over on Facebook Live. I'm going to go ahead and bring in our first call tonight. And we're going to talk with Kenneth, who has some questions. You can also post your questions here in the chat as well. We can go ahead and post them on the screen. Kenneth, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Rob?
I'm very excited, Kenneth. Nice to have you here. And thank you for being brave and jumping on. I know when we do this in the Facebook group, you know, I can't even get in the chat because so many people are lined up. But I think people are a little nervous. This is new. Why is Rob talking to me on my wall?
Well, to be honest, I didn't notice that this was in the Facebook group.
I posted it in the patron group too, because I said, look, I need somebody to be brave and come on here. But you can go ahead and click that link to join the Be Live, and I'll take questions as well from the chat. All right. So, Kenneth, here we are. What did you want to talk about here as we are a week out from the Ghost Island finale?
Well, I guess I was just wondering, like, how you think this season is going to be remembered in terms of having so many twists, and yet the twist didn't seem to make the show, like, more unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And what do you think people, the show, or what fans are going to want going forward in terms of twists?
You know, it's so hard for me to gauge all of this because we are so much, I feel like, in the bubble of people on the internet talking about Survivor. And it's such a small percentage of the people that actually watch the show. You know, on a given Wednesday night, 8 million, 9 million people watch it, even more watch it on the DVR. But I really believe that the number of people that are online talking about Survivor, it's probably under 100,000 people that are, right, you know, talking about the episode, and the rest of the far, you know, 99% of the audience that watch the show are, you know, sort of just absorbing it and taking it in 1 hour a week and not thinking about it in between. So I would have to say, if it's too many twists for us, I feel like that it's got to be too many twists for a large percentage of the audience. I mean, that's right, just my to bring my Kellen into this, that would be my gut reaction to that. I think that people, for the most part, have got to feel like it's too many twists. And I know that the show wants it to be unpredictable from week to week, and I think they feel like that if they shake up the tribes more and more and they give them all of these different tools, that will lead to more unpredictability in the game. But it's something that Taryn talks about a lot with Big Brother, where I think where there's too many twists, people are more uneasy in terms of like, oh, I don't know if I'm making that move. Oh, what if that guy has some magical power in his backpack and then is going to be able to thwart me? But in terms of like the tribe swaps, I think that we're sort of like spitting into the wind with wishing for there to be more less idols and less advantages. But I do think that the thing that they could cut back on is the tribe swaps, which I think that you can organically get these people to dislike each other more by having them that familiarity breed more contempt with the other players that are in the tribe. Let them, you know, sit with each other for 12 days and really get on each other's nerves. And then at the point where you have a swap, then they could really start to go after each other. I talked about this recently, that I listened to a podcast with Chuck Klosterman talking with Bill Simmons about how he felt like that the game has now become all strategy, and it's gotten so far away from where it used to be all character. And there was a nice sweet spot in the middle where you had strategy and character. It's gotten to the point where the game is just all strategy in the time, right, that you see them on the screen. And I think that it's got to be hard for people to follow, because I know I'm taking notes in some of these early, and like, wait, who's on which tribe? What is this? Who's there? And if you're not sitting there with a pen and a paper, I don't know how you're following some of this stuff.
Right. So I think, especially with the swaps, if you miss an episode, and there could be two swaps, and you'd be just totally confused. But I think they might do more of the twists of, like, it starts at the beginning of the episode, and it's used to the end of the episode, because then at least it's kind of easy for someone to watch the episode and follow what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing I think about sometimes is, how much do we want unpredictable? I know we like it to be unpredictable, but you know, if we had a season where, imagine, you know, Dominic and Wendell and Kellen, you know, they go out like back to back to back, like at 9, 10, 8, and then you get to a season where, are we saying, okay, well, this season is no good because all of the, you know, dominant players got voted off? Is it just the unpredictability, or is it that we want to see more adversity?
I think we want to see adversity. I think people always get mad, at least on Big Brother, when the really good players get screwed and get eliminated. Mm-hmm. So I think people would also get mad if Dom and Wendell had just like gone out right at the merge.
Yeah.
Because after all, I mean, you could make it really unpredictable by just flipping a coin every week, but people would hate that.
Yeah, well, we could just do a Brant Steele simulation at the start of the season and podcast that. That would be very unpredictable every single week. Yeah, it's hard. And I wonder if we are at the point where there is so much, do we have unrealistic expectations in terms of how much entertainment we want to be getting from a regular season of Survivor? I wish that we had a little more insight into what the average viewer was thinking in terms of somebody who's not listening to podcasts and following all this coverage on the internet. Have we are we oversaturated in terms of, you know, what we can reasonably expect from a given week from Survivor, and what the enjoyment level was from somebody who is sort of following the show, but not necessarily as intensely as we might be?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I'd be interested if they, like, at the beginning or ends of episodes, like, did interviews with people who are watching the show.
Oh.
Just to be like, what do you think is going to happen?
So
I feel like they don't want to like break the idea that the show is happening live.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or like that people are actually on the island.
Yeah. So what would that look like? Is it like Jeff at the finale asking the little girl to write down? Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff goes there every week and asks her who's going to be voted out. And then, you know, she's always going to be right. So
is she? I would like to see what happens when the little girl in the audience gets it wrong. Like, will we continue to have a little girl in the audience at every finale, always predicting what happened? And will we ever get to like, will they swap out the paper if the little girl gets it wrong? And then we cut back to her and the little girl is like devastated that her pick didn't win.
We need to find out like who was sitting behind her in the audience, and we need to like ask them if they saw the name she wrote down.
Yeah. I almost like I was far enough behind her where I thought I might be able to get a little bit of a peek at what she was doing, but I wasn't able to get the ultimate shot. I thought maybe Mike Bloom might have had it, but I don't think he had it either.
Sad.
Yes, like Gonzalez said. So, what did you think overall? Were you down on the season, or it was just average for you?
I think it was average. It was definitely not my least favorite season. I think the episodes were edited really well, that I was still like interested in the storyline. And they had a couple of like good villains who like could have been like really good, but they were still like decent villains or like opponents of the dominant alliance.
Yeah.
In Michael and Bradley.
I think they just got pretty unlucky production-wise, where every time they did a swap, it ended up where Malolo never caught a break in the game, where Navidi just had the advantage numerically at every single stop. And the one time that they sort of had that the ability to get the jump on Navidi, then where James was able to blindside Dominic and Wendell and Morgan ultimately. And they just they never went back to the tribal council. They were never able to, you know, link up with Chris Noble and, you know, be able to pounce on that. So it was just at every single stop, it was, you know, Navidi up, Malolo down.
Right.
So they got unlucky with some of these, especially with the split tribal council, where it ended up where again, like you never had a scenario where it's like, oh, there's three Malolo people over here and only two Navidi, where, you know, we even had that in Game Changers where all the people like the Mana tribe was down in the numbers, but they had the situation where there was five of them on one tribe with JT. And even though they were down numerically, they had like that. There was this one pocket where they had an edge. So they were able to at least get JT out of the game. But unfortunately, those are the breaks. The Survivor gods were very unfair to the Malolo. They were a truly Jacob Derwin cursed them when he said that that they were the best tribe. And that's why Jacob Derwin needs to return to reverse the curse.
Exactly. Well, I always remember Survivor Gabon, where they had the fake merge.
Yes.
And Marcus ended up going home. And they completely reverse the course of the game. So it can work out.
Yes.
It's not all the time.
Okay. All right. Well, Kenneth, thank you for breaking the seal on this thing and being the first brave person to come to Ghost Island with me.
Of course, Rob. Okay. Have a good night.
All right. Take care, buddy. Bye. Okay. All right. So let's go ahead. Let's see what else we have in the bullpen. Now we've got some people who are ready to go, and let's go ahead and try. Here is somebody that I haven't spoken with before. Is it Govind?
It's Govind. Pleasure to meet you, Rob.
Yes. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Very, very good. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Westchester, New York.
Okay. All right. So my former home state.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. This is quite the thrill. I remember back when I was living in the Middle East, I started watching your show, I think during Kageyan or something of that nature. And I got one of my questions on Aris podcast, and that absolutely blew my mind. And speaking to you now, that's just totally super cool.
Okay. Well, thank you. It is a pleasure to speak with you as well. What did you want to get into?
So I wanted to talk about, well, this whole win. I talk with my brother all the time about Survivor. He's also sitting here besides me. I wanted to talk a little bit about comparing this with...
Where is he? Let's see him.
Sure. Mothev, come over here.
Yes.
I think he was just listening to us.
Hi.
I'm a huge fan of yours.
Oh, you guys are the best.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. Well, he probably has a question of his own, but I wanted to compare and contrast this kind of with the most recent Big Brother Canada season.
Yes.
Mainly for the fact that I see many similarities in the way that Dom played and Kayla played and then Harris played and Wendell played. And at least in my opinion, I see a similar scenario playing out in the fact that you see this more socially dominant player coming through and winning the season, when many people are seeing the strategic gameplay from a Dom or a Kayla being more deserving, quote unquote, of a win.
Right.
And is that something you think is, what is there a certain template that a jury should be rewarding, or is that, and do you think that's going to be something that you see in future seasons where, despite whatever strategic gameplay you may be playing for the viewers to watch, and given the fact that that's not really what the jurors are going to see, are we going to be seeing social, a gameplay dependent on social skills being rewarded over strategic gameplay in the future?
It's a great question to see the similarities there. I think that if we were going to, you know, be fair, I think that Wendell's game is better than Paris's game. If we're going to, and again, and I didn't follow Big Brother Canada as closely as I followed the Survivor season, but that I don't think that there's been an evolution. I think that this is exactly the same as it always was, where the jury ultimately votes for the person that they have better feelings about. And I think that when we talk about resume, I think that that's something that is more of a tiebreaker between people when they go to vote in the jury, because I think that the resume is more important to the people at home, because that the jury, I believe that they vote based on the personal relationship that they have with the person. And I think that ultimately Wendell's personal relationship ended up being a little bit better with one extra person than it was with Dominic, where I think that and what's great about Big Brother is that we have the live feeds. And so we can have, you know, we have, you know, Taryn documenting and all the people that are watching the live feeds can see Paris every single day, have these conversations with people and be better at that part of the game than Kayla was. Whereas, you know, when we look at on paper, Kayla did this, Kayla did this, Kayla's accomplishments were much better than what Paris was able to do resume wise, but the jury just felt like that they had these better personal relationships and wanted to see one person win. Whereas it's interesting that with this cutoff with the back half of the jury versus the front half of the jury, that I think that the experience of the people that were the first five was probably a lot more similar to the experience that we had watching the show, where we're watching Dominic do these things with idols and being much more vocal at tribal council, because they have the perspective of someone who has this passive experience of watching the game play out, and they're sitting there with their popcorn in the jury like, oh my god, Dominic is incredible.
In her Ponderosa, she said the same thing.
Yes. And Kellen, I thought it really exemplified that very well in her conversations, of that she just felt like that she had that better personal relationship with Wendell, where then they get to the jury, and naturally I think that it'd be great if everybody was impartial and could look at it where, like, us at home are able to separate. We don't have a personal relationship with Dominic and Wendell unless we're sort of like interacting with them on social media, and we're able to separate a little bit more. But I think that the jury is going to vote for the person they would love to see win the game and the person that they feel better about giving this life-changing amount of money to.
Fair enough. I buy that wholeheartedly.
And I was thinking about this in terms of like all of the juries. And I think that you see this come up with Aubrey versus Michelle, because I think that that's a similar dynamic where Aubrey, I think, has the better resume, but Michelle was a person that the jury just clicked with better. But even if you go back to Richard and Kelly in the first season, it's like, well, I think we think of Richard as the person that was the bad guy and Kelly was the one that they liked better. Not exactly. That there were people on the from the Taggy side that really had animosity towards Kelly because she was somebody that flipped against them. Sue hated her guts, and I don't know about Dr. Sean, how he felt. And I think that they sort of, even though that Richard was a scoundrel, I think that they respected that he was more of a straight shooter as opposed to Kelly, who I think that they looked at as wishy-washy.
So then, like, thinking of Cook Islands, for example, do you buy the logic that more people liked Yul over Ozzy?
Well, I think that Yul was also a very charismatic guy. I have to go back and take a look at what the breakdown was. I know
Yul was actually not going to win until he made that deal with Adam.
Yeah, he did make that deal with Adam where if they voted, they voted out Penner at 7, that he would give him.
Adam got to survive one more vote and Parvi went before him.
Yeah.
Then he would vote for Yul no matter what happened in the finals.
Yes.
And then that's being Ozzy.
So, I don't know if there's a season where it doesn't track, but I do think that the jury will reward the person that they just ultimately have I don't think there's a season, and maybe you could say like something like, oh, Redemption Island, where the jury may not have liked Rob as much as they like Natalie Tenorelli. But I think that, you know, when there's a big gap between, you know, I can't look at myself in the mirror tomorrow if I vote for Natalie over Rob after the game that he played. So there may be a point where I have so much respect for what this person did. I don't like how they did it, but I have to give it to them.
You say it's more if they like the person or not, or if it's if they have mutual respect for someone or not? Because like we saw Chris voting for Dom more because of mutual respect than liking him.
Well, you hear with these stories from people where you hear from people like, oh, if Eddie would have gotten to the end in Karamoan, people were going to vote for him to win. And if Brandon Hance gets to the end in South Pacific, he would have won. So I think that, Fabio is a Survivor winner. And Sash probably played a better game than he did. If you're looking at the resume or even Billboard, top selling artist, Chase Rice, even, but you guys like that. But I think that the jury will ultimately come down on the side of the person that they just had the warmest feelings towards. And then we get into the game stuff as a tiebreaker. And I think the show really wants them to vote more on the game stuff because you end up in these situations where they can't show you Wendell's social game in 42 minutes. And if they tried to, it would be boring. Whereas Dominic's game is a lot more exciting and flashy, and they want you to see that. In the final tribal council format, I think they feel like helps be able to, you know, pinpoint those moves as opposed to the previous format of the final tribal council where you have one-on-one conversations with people. I think that highlights the relationship more than a jury cross-examining people. Like, yeah, what did you do? Why did you make that move? Tell me about that idol play. So I think that the jury still in these games comes down to how important your social game was. And I think that that is so important for somebody who's going to go play. If you're listening to this and you're going to go play in a future Survivor season one day or in a Big Brother season next month, then it's always, you know, social game first, everything else second.
So Rob, could I ask a really, really quick follow-up based
off
that?
Yes.
So in Ghost Island, this is something that I saw, particularly just from looking at it, and it kind of relates to respecting the game versus liking someone, where Chelsea, we kind of saw, we've heard in post-game interviews that she was kind of playing out there. She wasn't just perfect. But one thing we saw when she was voted out of the game was she looked back at Wendell and she said, good game, sir. And then he said, good game, lady. And what I thought from this was that she might have liked Dom better. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think she's said before, that she worked with Dom. She knew Dom better. But I think she kind of viewed her relationship with Wendell very similar to the relationship that Dom had with Chris Noble, where they were kind of like rivals throughout the game. And I feel if you think you're a rival with someone, where she had this perception that she was a rival with Wendell, she felt she should vote for him then, because otherwise she risked the fear of looking bitter at the end. Thing is something that people don't want to have.
Well, I think there's a lot there with Chelsea, and that's a good observation between that she did view herself as a rival with Wendell. And I had thought that maybe that was a reason why we didn't see so much of her in confessional, if she thought that this game was like a chess match between her and Wendell, and that clearly wasn't how exactly it was playing out. But I think it was something that Josh had touched on in his interview with Dominic, where Chelsea, I think, also felt very burned by Dominic, who she had been working with in that version of Navidi that voted out Bradley. And I think she looked at, okay, well, you know, I have a key ally here in Dominic. And Wendell, he was the one who made that decision of, hey, let's get rid of Chelsea next, that she's an immunity threat. And Dominic said, sure, I'm fine with that. And I think that that was a keen move on Wendell's part, because then Chelsea went out of the game, I think, blaming Dominic. Why didn't you protect me? Why did you turn against me? Or Wendell, I understand it a little bit. I wasn't as close with him, but I was closer with you. And I think that might have been another reason why she might have been upset with Dominic and, you know, respect vote for Wendell. It's a game, of inches.
Yeah, sounds good.
Really made my day. Thank you so much, Ron.
Hey, you guys are great.
And just like overall, from the fact that like probably this is the last time I'll be able to like just say this, from the point where I just owe you so much thanks for just getting me through really rough times. I remember like a few years back I had emergency surgery and I remember sitting in the hospital room just listening to like freaking Five podcasts and stuff of that nature. And you've just been there like throughout as like a mainstay throughout our whole life. Like we're relatively young. I'm 18. He's now 15 as of yesterday. Mm-hmm. Before yesterday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
And yeah, just thank you for all you do for this forever.
Thank
community.
You so much.
Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys so much. Happy that you guys found the show. And yeah, it was,
I have a at our school, we created something called Survivor Club now where, we talk about Survivor and all that stuff, and we have a lot of members now. And we all of us listen to you and talk to you. So it's really something that bonds all of us together. Thank you so much, Rob.
Hey, look, we're counting on you guys to keep the show on the air. You got to tell your friends, okay?
You got
it, mate. Thank you so much.
I've got little kids that have to go to college. Okay, so I can't do just 38 seasons. We need you guys some help. Okay.
Fair enough. Thank you so much, Rob. Hopefully one day we'll play. We'll catch you on next
season. And yeah, I'm sure this won't be the last time we get to chat, okay?
Fair enough.
All right, have a great night, guys. Bye.
Thank you.
Well, those guys were great. We don't get a lot of tag team duos here on the call-in show, so that was very fun. All right, let's go to Elizabeth, see what Elizabeth has to say. Okay. Elizabeth. Are you there? Elizabeth, do you copy? Elizabeth? Elizabeth? Okay, maybe it's not working. Oh, we had such good luck a moment ago. All right. Okay, let's go to, let's see, what does, let's talk to Adam. Adam B. What does Adam have to say? Adam, how are you?
I am doing well. How about yourself?
Very good. Are you the Adam B?
I am the Adam B, yes.
Adam B, can I give you a resume?
Please do.
Yes, Adam B is a wand-off superstar, best known for being the person to pen the They Kept In the Douchey Guy Joe Mena anthem.
Yes, I am.
Yes, and yeah, pleasure to speak. And also, one of my personal favorites, the Taryn Dale Every Morning with, I think that should be the name of that morning live feed update, Every Morning with Taryn Armstrong. So all great stuff. I am a huge fan of your work, sir.
Well, thank you. I say the same to you.
Yes. Okay. Adam, what do you want to talk about?
I was just thinking, you know, they brought in the fire making challenge with the idea that you could have a more competitive final three.
Yes.
And they brought in the final three so that it would be more competitive than the final two.
Yeah.
So do you think there's any chance they just get rid of the final three, keep the fire making, and go back to a final two?
Yeah. Well, I think that this worked out exactly the way where I think there was so much controversy at the end of Survivor 35. I think that Survivor production got exactly what they were hoping for here in this season with the fire making twist plus the final three. Because if you got rid of either one of those things, you're going to end up in a scenario where you don't have Dominic and Wendell in the final tribal council. And you have so many seasons in between. I think where I going back to Nicaragua was a close vote. I think that was one vote, 5-4 in Nicaragua. And then I think that all the way through, you don't even have another really close vote for some time. And I'd have to go back and take a look at what the numbers are. You have a lot of just very one-sided votes across the way. So now you have a final three. So you could potentially, like the first final three that they have with Yule and Ozzy, that's a very close vote, but you don't have a ton of close votes then for a really long stretch. So now you add this in where now instead of Dominic or Wendell getting voted out at the final four and then Dominic or Wendell going on to win 10-0, then you have this scenario where now you have a potential tie and an exciting final act to the show, where we got down to the dream scenario of a tiebreaker vote. But one of the things I think, it might have been the LFC podcast that was talking about this, was this idea of maybe could the is there any way to figure out who the zero vote finalist is going to be? Because there's always one, and somehow get them out of the picture to begin with. Or is there some value there with the person who, whether it's a zero vote or a one vote, whether it's Laurel, whether it's Ryan, whoever, Troyzanne, that person that it's pretty clear from the get-go they're not going to win. Is there any way to get them out of there and then have it be more mano-y-mano, mano-y-womano, however you want to do it?
That makes sense. Yeah, it always seems like, as you talk about, the game evolves, and we know that in the next 2 to 3 seasons, someone's going to find a way to beat this particular system. It always seems like they're moving the goalpost just a little bit further.
Yeah.
Which is fine by me, because I have low expectations. I like the show no matter what it's like, but I know a lot of what I read on Reddit is pretty vitriolic to any change they make.
Yeah, people don't like the change. That's that people would like it if they brought it back a certain way. I mean, I'm a purist, that I don't like a lot of the changes that they make. But I do feel like that in terms of the one thing that people say, boy, it was a boring second half of the season, but it was a great ending. I think you do have to say, all right, I have to give them some credit. I don't love how they get to this point, but if you get to that final battle and it's Dominic and Wendell as opposed to Dominic or Wendell losing at 4 and then one of those two guys running away with it in the final tribal council, I think that this was a better ending to the season.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it is interesting. My wife and I, we just like it however it comes. So it doesn't bother us when they make changes as long as the show's still around. But hopefully it will continue to be around and people can accept that they kind of have to keep making these changes to stay relevant.
Yeah, I mean, I understand they need to keep making changes to not make it stale, but I think that they should probably, not make changes, because I think that the audience is craving, change for the sake of change, but just try to think about, where are the problems and the pain points in the season in terms of the viewers? And then what could we do to eliminate? Like, if we could make changes to get rid of the things that we don't like, that would be like, I don't think that people would complain necessarily about it. I don't think they probably still would. But, the fire making was not, again, nobody loves it. But I really do feel like that this time around, I don't know how you could get that upset with it, because it ultimately gave you this, climactic final battle. And I do feel like that now that people know about it, I think that it gives the opportunity that, how are people going to game it? Will we see somebody ultimately do what Dominic talked about and then ultimately put themselves into the arena to go make the fire? I think that that would be super exciting to see somebody actually attempt that. You'd have to have some sort of a scenario where everybody realizes there's one guy here we can't beat. And you know what? If he gets to the end, I'm going to lose to him no matter what. So I will take this person on head on at the final 4 fire making. And then it could be, a crapshoot when you get to the final tribal council, where now the top dog got taken out at 4, and then next season they'll say we'll make fire making at 5. So, we'll see, but it would be very exciting to see somebody attempt that.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. It's just so hard, 'cause from the perspective of a player, you don't know, like for instance, if Dominic had tried to go head to head, we would have thought he was so dumb if he did that.
And you know what? If you had a scenario like that with millennials versus Gen X. You know, people talk about that. You know, I've talked with Adam Klein about that. He feels like that, you know, this is something that where David Wright got taken out at the Final Four. So now imagine this scenario where, okay, now you can't vote David Wright out at the Final Four. And now David Wright is going to go, and everybody knows that David Wright is really good at making the fire challenge. And if he gets to the end, he's probably going to win. So I forget if it was Ken, I guess, did Ken win immunity? Would Ken take, would he take on David Wright to, you know, knock him out before he got to the Final Tribal Council? I think that there, it could create some interesting scenarios. Is it better from a game player standpoint to be able to vote somebody out at four? It certainly is. But yeah. In terms of the TV product, I think that you might be able to have better Final Tribal Council matchups with this. And that was something I didn't really see in the way that it played out in Survivor 35.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know a lot of the discussion's been that at Final Four, winning the immunity doesn't really get you that much.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if there's something they could do as far as giving that winner the choice of what that face-off challenge would be. Like, it doesn't have to be a fire-making challenge. It could be a puzzle, or it could be some other random card game they throw in there. But just to give a little more incentive to want to win that challenge and have a little bit more control at that spot.
Yeah, I did see Jeff Probst talk about that they have some different weather-related things, like if they have a monsoon, that they could do some different things. I thought it was a great point that was made by the great Will from America on Twitter that talked about, like, hey, people used to say it was a disadvantage to win immunity at the Final Three, where Kelly Wigglesworth in the very first, Richard knew that, hey, this is going to be bad for my game to win that final immunity challenge. And he took himself out of it and forced Kelly and Rudy to have a showdown, knowing that it was going to be better for whoever got brought to the final two. So that I think that there is precedent for it not necessarily being a blessing. To quote Devin Pinto, this is not an advantage. So that it has been, you know, a part of Survivor history.
Yeah, and that's also like in the early stages of Big Brother, you see people wanting to throw comps all the time. So there's always like that inverse incentive to stay under the radar. And I guess it's kind of that same thing that if you don't have to make that final choice, the jury's not going to judge you for it.
Yeah. All right, Adam, pleasure to talk with you. Anything else you want to get into?
Kellen interview was great.
Oh, thank you. Awesome. I thought that was very fun as well. Yeah.
He was wonderful. And then Laurel showing up on the patron cast was awesome too. I'm excited to hear her story.
Yeah, I am too. I'm looking forward to going through everything and hearing, okay, I didn't want to make this decision, because I think that when we sort of look at Survivor and when it first airs, like, oh, people, they didn't make this move. They're so stupid. And I feel like that usually the answer is more complicated than this person is just a dumb idiot and that's why they don't make a specific move at a specific time. Like, everybody probably has a good reason for doing what they did at a certain point in the game. And, you know, it's so easy to say, okay, well, people like these two people were smart and everybody else was stupid. And it probably wasn't the case.
Yeah, I agree. Well, it was great talking to you, Rob. I'll let you get to the next person.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, and all the best, Adam.
Yep, you too.
All right, take care, buddy. Bye. All right, okay, let's keep bouncing around, and let's see. Carly, you ready? Let's see. Okay, let me check in with Carly. Carly, how are you?
Hello.
Yes.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going well. I like forgot that this was up and I was listening.
You zoned out.
Yeah, like I
sneak attacked you. Snuck up on you.
I wasn't even ready.
You want me to come back to you?
No. Let's keep this going. Okay. I got a lot to talk about.
Okay. All right. Well, what do you want? Well, let's get into it.
All right. So, what are most people saying? Like, is this... Are we just saying like what we thought of the finale?
Say what if you have a question or you have a discussion point, whatever you want to jump into. Okay.
So I guess I'm probably the only person where, and I don't know if a lot of people are saying this, you can let me know. I loved this season purely because of the fact that, like, I just love Wendell and Dom. Like, I don't know. I know that's so stupid.
Look, I don't think that's crazy. And I definitely see a lot of like, when is Survivor going to get back to characters? I love these characters. And then you have, you know, two pretty well fleshed out characters on this season. I don't think that's a crazy thing to say that you like a season because you like those two particular guys.
I guess for me, and I'm interested to hear what you have to say. Like, do you feel that if you are connected to the cast, then it doesn't matter if like there are no big moves, et cetera, or vice versa?
Well, I think because that plenty of people will go back and watch an old season because they love a character and the game might not be that exciting, but they'll go back and watch a season for. So it's a little bit where I think are we conditioned to expect there to be, you know, more and more shakeups. And then now, if there aren't shakeups, we're coming away disappointed. I think that could be a part of our own expectations, where if this was a season that was earlier in the line where we're not accustomed to as much volatility, maybe people would be higher on it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I totally understand that. For me, I guess the way I watch just TV, it's more so like, yes, I wanted to see, I don't know. I mean, I like the fire making thing at the end. Mm-hmm. And not because it caused more of a twist or less of a twist, but it was just there. I was a little disappointed when he brought out the thing and said, I'm going to read the votes, because obviously it was a tie. Mm-hmm. And instantly I knew that meant Dom was going to lose. And I was a little disappointed because I kind of like had Dom a little higher, but I still am so happy when they won.
So you didn't have a problem ranking them?
At first I did. I know at first nearing the end, I was like, I don't get why people are so like hype on Wendell, like, I love Dom, blah, blah, blah. And, like, now in retrospect, like, I like Wendell a lot. Maybe it has to do with the fact that yesterday on his Instagram story, he, like, posted behind the Philly Museum, and I was literally right there, and I was like, what, Wendell? He answered, and then I saw him.
Okay, so this is a very personal connection that you have with Wendell.
No, but I don't know.
Dominic was better until Wendell liked you. What if Dominic comes in on an Instagram story tonight? Will you rank them differently?
No. But yeah, comes in. No, but in general, I do think that Dom is like far superior than Wendell from my perspective.
Okay. So all right. So you feel you would have voted for Dominic?
Oh, 100%.
Even after the Instagram story?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. What if Wendell does another Instagram story tomorrow?
maybe it'll
be a tie. It's getting closer. Okay.
No, a lot of it might also have to do with the fact that I'm pissed off that some of them were so bitter. Like, Dom made this amazing move to
Who is bitter? Who is bitter? Sebastian?
Like Sebastian and like Kellen, they seemed a little like, mm-hmm. But whatever, to each its own. Okay. And I'm sorry, I wasn't the best. I had no idea. I was like,
I snuck up on you.
That this is where the podcast was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you.
So I was like,
Carly, all right, don't worry about it. You were great. Okay.
All right. Nice talking to you.
All right. Talk to you soon. Okay.
Bye.
All right. All right. Let's keep bouncing around. And let me talk to Andrew Kirk. Okay. I hear him so many times on the voicemail, but I don't get to talk to him on video.
How's it going, Rob?
Andrew, there's that voice. Andrew, when are you going to go play Survivor so that I can play all your voicemails on a podcast?
Never, because I can't swim.
Okay. Look, because last virus, you can't swim. Yes. Okay. Andrew, what's going on? We have a baseball player up on the wall there.
A couple of my ticket stubs in the background.
Yeah.
I'm a big A's fan. I actually work for the Oakland A's.
Oh, cool.
As a manager. So that's just some of the stuff I do. I thought it was a decent season. I don't know about you, but I don't like the seasons where one alliance dominates the whole time. And that's what happened this season.
Yeah, no, it was very much where, you know, I mean, I think anybody that's listened to me for a long time knows that I do like to see these seasons where there's a lot of different, you know, a lot of swings back and forth and, you know, a lot of movement. You know, that's how I, you know, I chose to play in the Amazon. So I naturally am very attracted to that type of gameplay. But, you know, you take every season can't be that.
Yeah, definitely. It wasn't like a terrible season. I mean, they had good moments, like you guys said in the recap show, which I haven't finished yet. The pre-merge was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the merge, it just got kind of predictable. I mean, the double tribal council with Jen and Michael going out was like,
yeah. Well, let me ask you a question. That this is something that I absorb a lot of stuff. But I want to say that there's a guy who does really great videos on YouTube named Peridium. He posts a lot of them on Reddit as well. And I believe that he posted a review of the season. And there was something that I believe he said where it got very predictable because that you had these people in like Chelsea and Desiree and a lot of these under edited characters that we as the people who are these, you know, really big fans of the show, we know, okay, they're not that important because we're not seeing a lot of them. So that they're probably not going to be, the, you know, this group isn't going to go to the end. So when you have people that are, you know, that's, you know, Chris Noble's alliance, that's Kellen's alliance, that you're not feeling that great about their prospects because we're not seeing that much. So if Kellen is allies with three or four of these people, you got to feel like that it's where I don't necessarily mind, you know, somebody being under edited in the pre-merge. In the post-merge, it's a little bit of a tip off, even though Angela does get to the final four.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, I mean, with, I mean, I, like I said, I thought it was a decent season. I'm happy 1-1. I do a fantasy draft with a good listener of the podcast, Jeremiah Yap, Soul Survivor Yap on Twitter.
Oh yeah,
and I had both Wendell and Laurel on my team, and
squad goals.
I don't know how, but I still lost by points. I don't know.
Wait, you had the winner and Laurel, and you lost.
Yeah, I don't get his point system, but I have fun doing it with him. He's a good guy.
Okay, I'd check the scoring system on that. That seems a little fugazi to me.
One question for you real quick for the Survivor offseason. I just got into Survivor about 4 years ago. San Juan del Sur. Heard your podcast from Brian Cohen, who's one of your good wrap-up hosts.
Yes, of the challenge.
My question is, from the challenge, I'm a big challenge fan. I was a challenge fan long before Survivor. But anyways, my question is, I have a few seasons left that I haven't watched of Survivor online. Which one? I'll run them by you real quick. You ready? I haven't watched Exile Island.
Do I have to rank them?
No. Which one should I watch next?
Okay. All right.
Exile Island, Fiji, One World. Do I really only have four left?
Yeah.
One World. So Exile Island, Fiji, One World, and Philippines. I haven't watched any of those yet.
Let's go with Philippines. That's the best of the bunch. Then I'd say go with Exile Island second. Then Fiji, then, you know, One World, I think you should watch it because of, you know, I think you want to see Kim, but, you know, there's something there in all those seasons.
Yeah.
There's something for you there.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thanks all for right. having me.
How are the A's doing?
They're doing good. They're over a couple games over 500. They've had a couple tough ones last couple days against Tampa Bay.
Must be nice.
Going back tomorrow.
Yeah. I am very sad right now. I was really looking forward to watching the Mets play here in this Survivor offseason, and now Survivor cannot come back soon enough. I'll be caught up on
one of the players that used to be on my on the A's, Cespedes.
Oh yes, when he's healthy, I'll be caught up on Survivor South Africa before I watch another Met game. It's rough.
Right, Rob, take it easy.
All right, okay. So there you go. All right. Take care. Bye, Andrew. All right. Let me go to Mike, who's been on hold. All right. Here is Mike. Mike Berger.
Yo.
Okay. Mike, how are you?
Good. I'm just plugging in my earpiece. Okay. How are you, Rob?
Good. Mike, where are you calling from?
I'm here in LA, on the other side of the hill from you.
Okay, yeah. Cool. All right. Yeah. Got a lot going on there.
Yes, yes. I got my two kids here. The older one I'm introducing to. I got my earpiece in, but he's like, you guys say hi to Rob? Yeah. Yeah. So I had the pleasure of meeting you, Rob, back in February of 2016 when we did the live know-it-alls here in LA, and I would love it if we had another event out here.
Okay. Yeah. We the challenge is always getting Stephen Fish back out here. That's the you know, it's easy for me to do it in LA, but it's tough to get Stephen out here, even though his family's out here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll be the first one to buy a ticket to come back out here. So
okay.
To
cool.
To be at the show.
Yes.
So here's something that has crossed my mind ever since Cook Islands. And it finally happened this season. We had a tie vote in the finale. And it worked out this season just the way the numbers were. And, you know, the fact that Laurel was able to cast that deciding vote. But there have been several seasons where that wouldn't have worked out. Anytime you have a jury of, let's say, nine people and you have a final three, it could have worked out 3-3-3. Let's say Yule, Becky, yeah. and Ozzy. What would they have done then? Or even in Micronesia, it may have been the only time they had a final two with an eight-person jury. And, you know, Eliza went up there and, you know, agonized over her vote. She ultimately voted for Parvati. But if she had gone the other way, it would have been 4-4.
Yeah.
And what would they have done?
So I get the sense that what they would probably do is get in, you know, they love the fire making. So I wonder if right. like, if it was in that scenario with it's Eliza, you know, is casting the vote to make it 4-4. I wonder if Amanda and Parvati make fire for $1 million. I wonder if we do that in the 3-person thing. I wonder if there's some other challenge where, okay, hey, it was 3-3-3. Hey, here's the bag of rocks. One of you is going to draw the white rock. You're out. You're third place. You go into that voting booth. You cast a vote for the winner. I feel like that we get into then, all right, now we have to bring a challenge into this to settle this stalemate and then open that up. I mean, that would be a really rotten way to lose. Get to the final trial council, get three votes. And then I'm speculating here on just like how the show operates. I'm guessing that's what they would do in the 3-3-3. And I think they realize that would be the suckiest way to end a season, and that's why they end up with these 8-people jury and 10-people jury, where that they would you know, have a scenario where they would have a final three and an even number jury.
Right Yeah, it's actually right now with my 6-year-old, I'm going back and I've introduced her to Survivor. Oh, she's 6.5, she corrected me. I've introduced her to the show, and now, you know, we've been binge watching the, you know, maybe 7 or 8 seasons over the past year. We're currently on Micronesia.
They like
it's interesting. She loves it.
Yeah.
She loves the show. It's funny because, you know, I remember it as such an amazing season. And at the time it absolutely was. It doesn't hold up quite as well 10 years later. Getting through the pre-merge is a little bit of, it's a little bit of a struggle.
Yeah,
it is. It's a very long pre-merge. I think it's 8 episodes, and, you know, just getting through, you know, Jonathan Penner's medevac, and then Chet pretty much quits, and then Kathy quits, and then, you know, the Tracy vote and the Amy vote. I'm just like, oh man, we got to get to this merge already.
It's a slog through the swap. You got some medevacs and stuff like that.
Yeah. And back then, they didn't expand, and they should have done this way back in All Stars. You know, that's the first time they had an 18-person cast. They should have expanded the jury a little further back. You know, like on your season on All Stars, I feel like Ethan and Jerry could have made the jury, because in later seasons they would have. And it just makes it a little bit more interesting, as opposed to, you know, losing these people in the pre-merge and then.
Yeah,
that's it.
You know, the challenge there with something like the All Stars is where you have people like Ethan and Jerry who didn't make the merge, who would be on the jury. And I never like it when they do that. Somebody that they have that, I think, in Cook Islands as well, where it's like, I never played with you, but you seem like a cool person, so I'll vote for you.
Sure. Cook Islands or even Heroes Villains, where it happened. And yeah, it happened a lot back in that era of Survivor. And I think they've kind of corrected that now. But
yeah. But I think it speaks to a little bit why, you know, when we have like people like Jessica Johnston or Corinne, where they don't end up making the jury, then I'm not sure what the numbers were in Karamoan, but I think it speaks to where that they have it needs to be an even number jury. And if you're going to have that final three.
Right. Yeah. With Corinne, she finished in 12th. And it's weird because in other seasons, 12th place makes a jury with the final three. So you never know what they're thinking.
Yeah, that one's the wacky one. But I think the Jessica one, I think, makes a little bit more sense because then that you would have had that 9-person jury with the final three.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Okay. But, all right. Well, yeah. Nice talking to you again.
Hey, you too, man. I hope to see another show out here in LA. And, you know, thank you for getting me through all the tedious dishwashing and chores and long commutes and everything where I'm, you know, your podcast is getting me through it. So loving it.
I really appreciate that. Would you, yeah. What if the show was in Irvine at the Irvine?
I would come down to Irvine. Yeah. Okay. It's not terrible. It's, you know, about an hour drive.
The problem is the Hollywood Improv. I think that's like a 200 seater. And then the Irvine Improv is like 400. So we could get more people in if we went to Irvine. But then the question is, how many people want to go to Irvine?
I want to go to Irvine. I'll be in Irvine.
Okay, look at you. All right.
Yeah.
Mike, thanks awesome. So much. Okay.
Hey, Rob. Thanks. Pleasure.
All right. Take care. Bye. Okay. All right. Let's go to, RJ. RJ, are you there?
RJ. Oh my God. I can't believe this. I was on here in News AF. And you call me the hype man.
The hype? So you were the hype man for News AF?
Yeah, that's what you call. I was like, oh my God. It was awesome.
Okay.
But anyway.
Yes. Well, what about now?
I'm still the hype man. Don't worry. I'm still watching.
Now, you were hyped about being on, or you were hyped about News AF?
I'm hyped about both. I'm hyped about being on, talking to you. Hyped about News AF. I'm hyped about News AF. Rob,
tomorrow
podcast.
Morning, Tyson is going to have some stories about this poker tournament. Yeah. Yeah, be on the lookout for that. Okay.
I was, where the heck are you at, man? Today, but it's all right.
Tyson had to go play poker yesterday, so we usually do it on Tuesdays. That's going to be on Thursday this week.
Makes sense. Okay. All right, cool. I feel like I'm like rambling. Like
no, you're good.
Right,
what do you want to talk about?
Is it all right if we talk about next season? I have a cue about that.
Yeah, you want to talk about the theme? Obviously, you're not going you don't have spoilers, anything like
no
that.
Sort of. I want to talk about one of the cast members that has been Josh Wiggler.
Okay, yeah. See that?
Josh Wiggler.
Go for it. Go for it.
Yeah. Talking about your old friend that you were on the round table with, Mike White.
Yes. Yes. Who? He was there. The story about him was that he was he has some relationship with Jeff Probst. I'm not sure how friendly they are, but that he was the person who his claim to fame in Survivor to this point was that Jeff Probst told him about, like, all right, blood versus water, we're doing Redemption Island. And Jeff's story that he told was that Mike White's face dropped and like, oh, nobody likes Redemption Island. And that's why they did like some like nothing challenge thing during San Juan del Sur. I mean, I kind of feel like that anything that was good from Redemption Island for Blood versus Water, I think was, there was a lot of fun stuff that happened with I wouldn't have minded a Redemption Island from the, especially Julie McGee quits. It would have been a great time to bring somebody back into the game.
Yeah. I think on that, I think you've said this point before, if they bring Redemption Island for the first half of the game,
ended at the merge. Like, somebody comes in from the merge. That's fine. It's when Ozzy comes in at the final five and is a challenge away from winning the game. That's where it's problematic for me. But I don't have I think it's exciting. I think it's, you know, Redemption Island has some fun moments in the pre-merge of these seasons.
Yeah, that first episode is a great one.
Yeah, because there's a lot of like, hey, you voted me off first. Screw you. I hate you. When I come back into this game, you'll see what happens. Ozzy votes himself out of the game to go and beat Christine Markoski. There are some fun Redemption Island moments. Get Mike Bloom on the phone. Let's do the top 10 Redemption Island moments of all time coming this October 10th.
Yeah, I'll call in. I'll have a cue. Yeah. So maybe.
Okay. So well, anyway, back. I'm sorry. I don't mean to hijack your question.
It's all right. It's all right. You know, wherever it goes, I'm cool with. Anyway. So yeah. Like, is there like a conflict of interest there? Like, do they let him and Jeff Probst like hang out or something? Like,
again, I don't know if they are like hanging out. I mean, there's definitely been people who are friendly with Jeff who've gone back and played. It's not the kind of thing that I really worry about. I mean, Jeff Probst and Colby were, great. If anything, I worry about the friendship after it, because I don't think there's really a great track record of then people like staying friends with Jeff after they play, because I think that they might go in feeling like, hey, Jeff is going to I'm buddies with Jeff. And then Jeff is Colby and Jeff, we're almost in a fight in Heroes versus Villains, when Colby is Jeff is all right, I got a Snickers bar. Who wants some? And Colby's I'm ready to do the challenge now. He's I hear you, brother. We'll do the challenge when I say we're ready to do the challenge. Savage was very friendly with Jeff, and then he went out. And Jeff is going to be all business. So don't expect Jeff to take it easy on somebody just because. So he's done it a couple times before. It's not the kind of thing that I'm worried about. I'm sure people will be upset if Jeff knows somebody. But how much other than that one story, how much are we hearing about, Jeff, he's, all the time with Mike White?
Yeah, that's definitely not going to be making the edit about their past friendship, for sure, if it does come up.
Again, friendship might be, using the, term loosely. I don't think that they're super close.
Right. So how do you think he's going to do,
Honestly, I don't know a lot about him. I think I may go back and watch his season of The Amazing Race. And did he play The Amazing Race once or twice?
I think he played twice. He was out the second. He was the second, boot, we'll call it.
It might be a worthwhile podcast along the way to sort of maybe get Jessica involved and do some sort of a podcast of what do we learn about Mike by going back and watching his season of The Amazing Race. That might be an interesting exercise as we start to get closer to season 37. So I don't know a lot about his track record. I do know that he is also, did he write School of Rock or he was an actor in School of Rock?
He was both. He wrote it and he acted.
Maybe that's a worthwhile movie podcast. And he also wrote the 2017 film that was covered on News AF, the Emoji Movie, which was well documented. That I've already done a podcast about the Emoji Movie that I talked about that with Danny and Tyson. People really liked that podcast.
Yeah, I listened. It's hilarious. And I don't know if you got my Snapchat, but so you probably don't. I Snapchatted you about it.
Oh, what'd you say?
I was Mike White, he's credited, the worst movie of all time.
Oh.
It's going to be on Survivor.
Yeah. The reason why we covered it was because Rotten Tomato, it got the worst Rotten Tomatoes score of all time. And so we said, let's go out and do that. I'd love to do that again with Danny and Tyson this summer and find another movie, hopefully that Mike White did not write. And then we can cover it on News AF special edition.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Do we have enough hype?
Man. Oh yeah. There's tons of hype. Believe me, there's tons of hype.
Yeah. Where are you calling from?
Oh man. I'm in Pittsburgh. I'm not in Australia.
Okay, I was going to say. Why do you have the Australian flag up?
Well,
you right love now you have so much hype for Australian Survivor.
Yeah, I haven't gotten around to watching it. I don't have a link, so I haven't been trouble finding it. So
okay,
my girlfriend, she's just a huge Australia fan.
Is she Australian?
I don't know. No, it's kind of funny. She's just really into Australia.
She's an Australia stan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. But me, we're in Pittsburgh right now. A lot of Survivor winners coming there.
Yes.
Like Jenna Maraska from Pittsburgh.
Jenna Maraska. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. State of Pennsylvania is representing.
Yeah.
Man, and another one to the list.
Thanks for having me on, Rod.
All right, well, keep in touch. Awesome.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I gotta call in more. I'm trying to get on Survivor. I've been sending my audition tapes.
Well, what are you saying? What are you saying?
Maybe you'll see me.
Well, you want practice? What are you telling them?
Well, I pretty much tell them my story about.
I was the hype guy for News AF. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you want to get I try to give my personal story because I know they want when you're doing audition. Sorry, I'm getting mixed up now. They're looking for people that can tell their story well.
Yes.
So that's what I'm trying to do. is, you know, like I went to film school. I didn't get a lot of support from my parents. Like, this is a big, it's another story for that. Like, too personal for
all
this,
right. Well, just that's
what I'm trying to be.
Just, you know, try to really just crystallize who you are as, you know, just try to look at yourself as you know how casting is going to see you, and if just try to like boil yourself down to, and I know we're all very fleshed out three-dimensional characters, but just get down to that elevator pitch of, you know, in four or five words, just describe who you are, that who is that person that we're going to see on the show, just like all these characters that really pop. If I tell you, like, who's this Dominic guy? You could describe him in, you know, four or five words to me. There's this guy Chris on the show. You could describe him, you know, very succinctly to me what that character is. And the best Survivor characters have that. And so the more you can sort of just crystallize that, as opposed to like, well, it's a long story who I am, then that I think that hurts your chances. But, you know, the more you can just really get down to who you are and, you know, show casting how you view the world as this person that you're describing, I think that really does help your chances.
Okay. That's great advice. Thanks.
Keep it like just condense
it short.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Awesome. Because I feel like I fit into the archetypes that they cast with, like Stephen Fishback type, you know?
Stephen Fishback type. Yeah. We're always looking for more of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right.
Well, thanks, Rob.
All right. Take care,
buddy. Thanks for having me on.
Bye, RJ.
Thanks. Bye.
Right, before we get to the next call, let me just take a moment and thank another sponsor here today. Those are our friends over at Bear Mattress, because Bear Mattress is the coolest mattress that you're going to sleep on. It sleeps 7 times cooler than a regular foam mattress, and it's designed especially for your active lifestyle. Whether you're a professional athlete, weekend warrior, or just on your feet all day, you'll sleep better and perform at your best, because Bear was built for optimal cooling, comfort, and muscle recovery. And they've got a great offer for the listeners of Rob as a Podcast. Use the promo code POD100 to get $100 off your mattress at bearmattress.com. That's B-E-A-R mattress.com. The Bear Mattress uses a scientifically proven technology called Sealient to relieve tired muscles and improve your sleep quality to boost your athletic performance. And they've got a 100-night risk-free in-home trial that's like 2 Australian Survivor seasons that you can try out that mattress and get 100% of your money back if you don't like it. They will ship it for free right to your door, and it's made right here in the USA. These Bear Mattresses, they start at just $540. It's a great deal. Plus, you could use that code POD100 for $100 off any size mattress for a limited time only. The mattress is made from eco-friendly materials and have over 5,000 five-star reviews. So what are you waiting for? Check it out. BearMattress.com. That's B-E-A-R mattress.com, and use the code POD100 for $100 off any size mattress for a limited time only. Okay. Jeremy,
you hear me all right?
I hear you. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I actually haven't called live into one of these since the Survivor Nicaragua, like post finale call or whatever.
Wow.
Remember, that's like when you had people like actually call in with their phones and stuff. And
so it was like, I don't even remember what we did. I think I had like, it was so ghetto that I, you know, this is a long time that we're doing this. I think I had like a microphone on like a coffee table. And then I had like the portable phone from my house, like with a rubber band up against the microphone so that people could hear. But look, the technology has gotten us to the point where now here we are face to face, Jeremy.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I've gone back and listened back to that like once, and I'm talking and Reyes starts like making a lot of noise. And I think Reyes had like a bell or something on its collar something like that.
Yeah, we were making a ton of noise. It was amateur hour then. Yeah.
Right. Well, and you guys started explaining, like, hey, like, you know, all this noise, that's Reyes the dog. And like, I didn't hear that whatsoever. I just kept talking and it was pretty funny. But, okay. I don't know if this has been addressed on any podcast or anything, but can we officially call the intentional Matt Singh completely dead?
Completely dead.
Has Stephen Fishback been like yelled at for that? No, I know he was the guy that came up with it. At least I think he was. Like, can
if we're killing it, we'll give him the credit.
Yeah, right? Like, okay, literally since Survivor Philippines, that was the last time where the person who ended up winning was on the tribe that did the worst.
Hmm.
Every season since then, like, even though it's good to go to a tribal council beforehand, like, the heroes lost first, and so, you know, Ben ended up winning, but, like, the Hustlers were really, like, the bad tribe from, you know, their initial thing. Like, it's better to have a ton of options, I think. And, like, I mean, that's basically what keeps happening. I think this season made that, like, really, really relevant.
That's a good point in terms of the intentional. I'm trying to think if there was another time that it came close to coming to fruition. I'm taking a look at the chat to see if you guys have any instance. Yeah, it was fluky.
Maybe before Philippines. I just saw it back since then.
Yeah.
And, like, the person who ended up winning was definitely not on, like, the worst tribe in that season.
Well, Denise did catch a big break in that there was that medevac of, and I, that her name escapes me, of the girl with the short blonde hair.
Dana,
I think.
Dana?
Yes. Dana? And so Denise caught a break there and was lucky that they wanted to vote out Katie at that point.
Yeah.
And, and Tandang was so dysfunctional. And on top of that, Jeff Kent and Penner, they were dysfunctional. So, yeah, Malcolm and Denise really did luck into a really great situation where there were two tribes that had sort of a toxicity between them. And so, yeah, they were two fractured groups, and they were all, they were the tightest two. And I do think that that means something where, and they didn't turn on each other up until the very end. So, yeah, I think that it's probably, the theory is flawed.
And I think essentially what it's saying is, like, it's good to go to a tribal council before, like, you get to a merge or so. And, like, I think that holds up, at least as far as, like, you know, people who actually, have that chance to kind of develop their strategic chops. I think the only one that didn't do that would have been probably Cagayan, where, where Tony was able to, avoid. But he at least got to do the whole thing with voting out Cliff Robertson and all that. But
yeah, so I think you want a tribal council under your belt in the pre-merge, at least, so you can sort of, like, oh, okay, this is how, and you're not going up against people that have been to five tribal councils and you haven't been to one. And so, I think that is important.
Wins. Yeah. I just thought about that too.
I think we're saying in a perfect world that, there is a little bit of a learning curve, and, we have seen people that also go out at their first tribal council at the merge. So, it's not impossible to win if you haven't been to a tribal council, but I think it's a little bit of experience with it is good. And we also have Denise, who went to every single tribal council, which we're sort of, like, looking at her as the anomaly. But I think that if you are in the scenario where if you've lost, like, three challenges in a row, is it worth it? Should you try to lose the fourth one? Like, could you just be looked at as, because a lot of times I think that there is, like, a scenario where there's one person who's left and be like, there's bigger problems.
Yeah, and I think that probably would have been last season when they voted out Allie, when she was, like, clearly opposed to, to Ryan after she was super mad at him. That was, like, a good thing to, to get rid of her. So that probably, like, even, I don't know if they, I know there was talks about maybe they threw it or not, but, like, that certainly ended up being good. So maybe, like, in that situation, But, like, in general, this is,
It's definitely, a three-tribe thing. And I think it really comes down to, how much do you think that the other tribes will tear each other apart? And it's very hard to predict.
And in general, I know you've been trying to get fans' opinion on this season. I thought this season was great. Like, okay. I mean, obviously, like, I was biased because, in my fantasy team, like, with one other guy, he picked Michael first. Then my two that I picked were Dominic and Wendell. So, like, and then, like, I ended up with Laurel later. So it was like, I was in general rooting for them. I don't always root for who I pick, premierage, but, like, when, you know, the people that I like the best are the ones that are doing well. And like, I thought it was really cool to see what I think might be like the best, you know, the best survivor duo I think of all time. I mean, obviously I would say Denise and Malcolm were great, you know, JT and Steven were great, but like, as far as just like watching these two people do something that no one else has done, to where like they did take each other all the way to the end. And obviously because of the fire making challenge and everything, it kind of just circumstances allowed them to. Mm-hmm. But and then with the tie and everything, just kind of seeing that, like, you know, come to its fruition through the whole thing. Some episodes are predictable, but like that's every season of Survivor, and people are so like mad about like, oh my gosh, one episode was predictable because all of a sudden Desiree is talking.
It was more than one, but I understand what you're saying.
But like, I think there's always like a couple of good things with every episode, and for anyone who's trying to, you know, trying to make some episodes better, watch with some casual fans who just like overreact to everything and aren't like looking at like, oh, Desiree's talking, so she must be the one voted out. Like, whereas I am definitely thinking that, like, mm-hmm. the other people, they're like, whoa,
who do you watch it with?
She was Navidi. Just some friends who like don't like listen to podcasts or anything like that.
And what was their reaction to the season?
They enjoyed it. They definitely were like, wait, like, why doesn't, you know, Laurel do a flip or anything? But like, I think that thing too, you could probably definitely understand that Laurel might think, oh, if they split votes and then I scoop up all these Malolo people.
But I don't know if she really did think that. I think that she was just like looking for, she was basically like, I think, on the freeway, and like her gas light was on E. I was like, maybe I can make it to another exit. I can make it to another exit.
And I did think that I think she said it to you in the red carpet of like how like who like she would have had to go over with Kellen, and like, you know, Kellen had just put two votes on
her. They could not
and,
get like, on the same page, those two. That was a big problem.
And like, I think that, you know, that comes down to like where she, like, in general, was unlucky by being on Malolo and therefore having less options as compared to Dominic and Wendell, who had, Donathan and Laurel, because they were in a more numbers position, you know, going into swaps and things like that. But I don't give her, you know, too much crap about that. But that was like the thing that they were talking about. Like, wait, why doesn't she flip? Like, they were wanting to see Dominic or Wendell go down, but like, in general, just like watching, you know, a lot of them were big fans of Chris. They're like, oh, he did the best at that challenge throwing the beanbags. He's a baseball player, so he's clearly the best and should win. Like, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. And like, oh, I really like that Chelsea girl. She seems really nice. And I'm like, I mean, and I'm like in the corner, like, oh yeah, she's definitely not one of the guys. Like, just like, I can show you, like, you know, the edgic or whatever.
Right.
How she's never going to have a chance. But like, you know, they don't think about that stuff. So watching with, you know, some more casual fans kind of helps you get all of that out of the way and kind of just enjoy it for more of a true search, I think.
Yeah, I think it's almost like that we are people that are like, you know, baseball sabermetricians, where we sort of like know all of like to the point where sometimes like it almost takes the fun out of like watching the baseball game, where if you watch it with somebody who is, you know, not with like all of the, you know, war and, you know, 10 million, like, you know, baseball reference stats, mm-hmm. then, you know, you can enjoy the game a little bit more. And sometimes we have to like, just, you know, take a step, but it's hard to unknow what we know, because most of us are like, you know, are somewhere along the way towards those 10,000 hours of watching Survivor, where we know the little things that the show does to tip us off. And so it's super predictable to us at times, because we know those things, where it's maybe not as predictable to somebody who is not, you know, thinking about the show, even if they've watched it for 16 years.
Sure. And I guess my opinion, like, I mean, I think once you have a season that you really love so much, you like hold everything to that. Like, I think, you know, ever since Tony, like ever since then, no season is going to be as exciting. No one's going to be as exciting as him. Like, that was my favorite episode of Game Changers, was the premiere, just because we had him army crawling over the ground. And I'm just like saying to my friends, like, this guy, can you believe that he's here? And then, you know, it gets voted out. But
and nobody loves Tony more than me. But it's like, you know, you're chasing that high of Tony, you know, season after season. And he was such a unicorn. And the fact that he won was so amazing. And I think that Dominic is probably a better player than Tony, with all due respect. Please, Tony, forgive me. But Dominic's a better version of Tony, but it doesn't mean he's as entertaining as Tony. You know, Tony was this guy's a lunatic.
My favorite episode ever was that merge episode in Cagayan, and like watching with some friends and stuff. And we were all in college at this point, and like they were like jumping up and down and just like the excitement. They were like, oh my gosh, you're playing Idols and Idols. And then like all the votes come up, Jeffra, and like we're all like freaking out. And then, it's just like, you know, things like that. I mean, but that just because that happened doesn't mean that these seasons are bad. Like it's still Survivor, and I guess I don't know, maybe I'm just more optimistic than other people, but like, and it was fun. It had some good wacky characters. Chris Noble had his goofy stuff that he was doing. You know, people like Donathan, like Laurel.
Survivor, like anything, you could focus on the negative, or you could focus on the positive, and the negative is always going to get more attention. So nice to hear that you enjoyed it.
Yeah. And so I'll go ahead and let some other people get on. But I want to also reiterate from the two guys who were on the chat before, you know, I've been listening to you guys since Heroes vs. Villains. You guys are great. I've fallen asleep to you and Tyson talking about random ridiculous, basically like Tyson's old podcast before he won Survivor and got like really strategic about everything.
Yes.
Were basically news AF, like his cop stories. People who are listening, go back and watch Tyson breaking down the exit of Jimmy T for Survivor Nicaragua. His stories, it's half the time he talks about him being pulled over by cops, and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, just go listen to some of that. They don't talk about Survivor for that much. So it's like just like another news AF. Like, those are still great to this day. And like, you know, ever being like overwhelmed with anything or just having trouble, just like put that on and just like, you know, make a day instantly better. So you do that for all of us. And so, just to echo what those guys say, thank you very much.
Yeah. I don't think we felt compelled to talk about what was happening on the show for a couple years into the podcast. Yeah. Especially Survivor Nicaragua. I mean, that was like, you know, is anybody even listening to this? Let's just, you know, talk about whatever comes up.
That's to like, what did Jimmy T do? Is he the robbed, you know, the robbed goddess of this season? Like,
that was, yeah, we didn't get that voicemail.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that happened.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, what else was it? Benry making squirrel noises. Oh my gosh. Still to this day, by far the worst podcast was Benry, but it's like just a funny thing.
The Benry podcast was, I guess we talked to him during Survivor Redemption Island, where, you know, like you were sort of like, you know, getting guests on the podcast has been a 8-year struggle. And look, they're not all going to be winners, but we got Benry, and I saw him at the Reality Rally, and he was like a fun guy. And he said he would do the podcast. And I think he called, and he was like at a Dodger game, and he was like leaving the Dodger game, and I think I don't think he saw the episode that we were talking
really
about.
Did not I had no idea of that, but
I don't know, or maybe did see the episode, funny. but he was at a Dodger game.
But like even that, like it was still enjoyable just to like listen to, like, this guy has no idea what he's talking about. He was on Survivor, like that was that's like, I mean, and Leaf's exit interview, still to this day, like a gem of a thing, even though it was what it was, you know. Yes. Like, it just, all those things, like, you know, people who listen to him a lot, like, will remember. And so even if there's a bad guest, is there even a bad guest anymore? Like, whatever.
That's just from what I read on Twitter. Yes. But
Millennials versus Gen X was a fine season, and there are plenty of people on it that were great. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Look, if you have any other gems like this, you know, I'm always looking for Miles Nye had recently said to me about how, like, you should take like some of these like old shows that are really good. If people that are like only listening like 2 or 3 years that they've never heard them before, if you can think of any other things like that, shoot me an email and let me know about some, even if it's just like a clip show to put together at some point.
Like, and just like, you know, weird combinations, like Kobe and Sandra were on a podcast once together. I don't even remember what season that, but just like things that,
back,
you know,
when Sandra used to come on the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, is she like,
she doesn't want to come on anymore. Too good. No,
really?
She's upset with me because I asked Johnny Fairplay if she was a game changer, and she won't even entertain the idea.
She's not mad at you. She's mad at Johnny Fairplay. That's ridiculous.
No, she's mad at me. I texted her. She did not. She won't even return my texts anymore.
What? I don't feel like anyone should be like highballing you at this point. Like,
look, I wish it wasn't the case. From your lips to God's ears, Jeremy.
All right. Well, you're doing great. I'll let some other people get on. But okay. Yeah, nice talking to you. Yeah,
very nice to talk to you. Okay, and don't wait another 8 years. Okay.
Well,
okay.
That's good.
All right. All right. Take care, Jeremy. Bye.
See ya.
All right. Let me go to. Let me check in with Sam. Okay. Sam in Denver. Sam, how are you?
I just got here. I'm good. I have no idea what's been talked about yet.
Okay, fire away. You got a Survivor question?
No.
You want to come back when you do? Yes.
Why am I here?
Well, you went on Facebook and then we had a post that we were talking to people about feedback from the Survivor finale here in the off season, and we're talking to people.
Well, hi everyone, and Joe, you should come in here. He's teasing us in the comments.
Yes. Oh, Joe Mena?
Yeah, he keeps saying like I might call in, I might not.
Okay, he's taunting people.
Yes, he is. Christian, do you have any questions about the season of Survivor? This season? Yeah.
Well, Sam, I don't need you to ask. I'm asking people for questions that don't have your own podcast asking people for questions.
Sorry, I thought that this was just another like normal thing. I was like, great, I get to talk to Rob like 3 days this week.
No, it's not a patron show. We're live on the Facebook page.
It's the general public. Hi, general public.
Yes. All right. Well, here.
I don't know.
Here. You stay here. Let's get somebody on that to ask that has a question. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Get the motor running.
All right. You can help answer the question. Let me bring on Mark. Okay. Here's Mark. Mark, how you doing, buddy?
Hi, Mark.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, Mark. What's going on?
Not much. I do have a question.
Yes. Okay. What's new?
Thanks, Mark.
Nothing much is new. Hopefully I had a good interview this morning for a job, so I'm hoping for that.
Okay.
But my question is, do you think the tribe swaps are set in stone, or will they kick in only as an option if one tribe loses three in a row and they need to balance out the tribes?
So I don't know what the real answer is, but what the show has always said is, and from what I understand, there's lawyers involved that make sure that these things are on the up and up, that there's like a Bible of everything that's going to happen in the season from the start, and they end up doing the tribe swaps, that it's predetermined, and they do it based on what, there will be people that will say, no, they do it when they feel like it. And there's other people that will say, hey, they say that this is the case. And so we'll go with it. So that the official answer from the show has always been, it's all set in stone, even in Palau, that they weren't going to do a merge, that they, it played out exactly as they drew it up. It just so happened that that's how it was.
All right, because this season, I think after 9 days they swap, which was like really quick.
I think it was even earlier than that. I think it was only after 5 or 6 days. They only had two tribal councils. They voted out Stephanie Valencia, Stephanie Gonzalez, and then Jacob Derwin, and then they swapped.
All right, and then next season we have the more themed tribes. Are they going to swap back quickly or?
I don't know. They did in Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers after three tribal councils. I mean, my hope with David versus Goliath is that they do at least four tribal councils together with the group. And then because in Millennials versus Gen X, that's what they did. And they had that summit, which was kind of like it was like a waste of time. But they kept the tribes together for long enough where, to be honest, that was probably maybe the most boring part of the season, like a couple of those, episodes with like Paul Wachter. Yeah. But with all due respect to Paul Wachter, the people disliked each other enough that they were willing to, you know, flip. And even though, like, just like in this season where we had every time it was in the VD advantage, they voted out the Malolo. In Millennials versus Gen X, when you had those tribes of five and six people, the group that was in the minority from their original tribe ended up voting out somebody who was in the majority. Where, and I think it was because they were sort of sick of people from their original tribe. And so they had like an axe to grind with each other by the time they got to other people. So I think that pushing the first tribe swap back, I think would help some of the things that people think are problems. What do you think, Sam?
I agree with that. Yeah, there were not only were there too many, the quantity of swaps was a lot, and the, yeah, just the rapid fire nature of it after just barely getting to know those tribes 6 or 7 days in.
Yeah. No, I think the show feels like, hey, if we swap people up earlier, then they'll be more likely to switch things up after the merge. But I think that what it's done is make people, especially people that have never gone to tribal council with their original group, be more sort of like, you saw the Navidi group. Okay, well, let's just stick to Navidi because that's the plan. Us 10 are going to get to the end and then we'll pick off all these other people. And whereas if Navidi had to go to a tribal council, I think then the writing would be on the wall more for the people that were on the outside of the majority at Navidi to say, oh, I got to switch things up. I can't stick with Navidi, that I'll be the next one to go, or I'm the first one out from Navidi. So they'll end up, I think that it's tough to shake up the tribes before they've both gone to tribal council. I think that that's has not given us great results.
Yeah, I think that's why like things like pagonging are so like just iconic in the vocabulary of survivors, because it was one solid tribe for the whole time because they never used to do that stuff. And now it's like, even when people would say Navidi strong, I was like, oh, is it because they were with this person like 6 days ago? I forget.
Yeah. Well, I think that people know also, hey, when I get to the merge, I got to mix things up with the other group. So even if I think that people, if they had like a scenario where like a heroes versus villains, or where we didn't even have a swap, when people got to the merge, I think that they might even be, I know I have to switch because I can't just stick with my group until the end. But I think one swap is the perfect number.
Yes.
So, and I loved what they did with the split tribal council this season. It didn't work out in terms of providing a big swing, but I love that the show took that risk, and I think that that could maybe be a little more exciting in the future.
Yeah, the concept is there, and now they can just build on it and hopefully listen to our feedback a little bit. Okay. Do they care what we say here?
Look, they're busy, I think, making new episodes of Survivor, but I think that eventually, you know, it's sort of a little bit like of a trickle down. Enough people are talking about things, eventually something lands somewhere.
Hopefully they don't pull from just the Survivor Facebook page. Good Lord.
Well, I don't want to, disparage the Survivor Facebook page too much.
It's good, but the B&B, like, they did a game. Did you hear the other day their game of just, like, which one got more likes, the Facebook comments that were like, they should have both won $1 million.
Yeah, I listened to the first 30 minutes or so, but I didn't finish it yet.
Oh,
listening to Mike's AMA.
I'm incredibly out of just really bizarre comments got like 700 likes on the Survivor Facebook page that were like, and just a lot of people saying like, just discounting the fact that 10 people voted 5-5 and just saying like, why did one person, what was there only one person who voted in the finale?
Yeah.
That's not really what happened.
That's not what happened. People are, all types of different Survivor fans. Look, without all those people, the show couldn't stay on the air, Sam.
Yes, I understand.
God bless them.
God bless.
Okay. All right. Mark, anything else you want to touch on?
No, that pretty much covers it.
Okay. All right. Mark, you take care. Sam, thank you for the assist.
Yeah, I did what I could, Rob. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You got it. All right. Take care. Bye. All right. There's Mark. There's Sam. Let me go to Matt. Okay. And let's bring Matt on. Matt, are you there?
What's up, Rob?
How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Very good, Matt. Nice to chat with you. I appreciate all the questions for the shows.
Of Of course.
Recognize the name.
I love the show.
Yes, thank you. So what's going on?
You know, I don't really know. I was just kind of listening on the podcast. I do have a question. I guess I could ask you about the Game Changers twist.
Yes. Which one?
I don't know if you saw my email. I sent in an email about it too. But so I think that you've talked about it a lot, where the Game Changers twist didn't really work out maybe as well as it could have. I know you talked a lot about possibly having like the wheel that you could spin.
Oh no, the Ghost Island.
Oh, Ghost Island. My fault. Yes, my fault. Ghost Island twist.
Yes.
The wheel that you can spin. And so I was thinking just of some ideas that maybe Survivor could incorporate to a future Ghost Island season. I was thinking more like along the lines of something that I really like that Big Brother does, where in the Ghost Island twist, when someone goes on to Ghost Island, instead of just having a random game or not having a game or spinning a random wheel and winning a prize, what if Survivor sort of made them work for that prize? So, you know, some sort of activity that they had to do, whether it was like getting a clue to, you know, trying to find the idol or advantage at the challenge, or like something that Big Brother does where
like kick 2,000 goals.
Well, you know, like in Big Brother, where they might make you go up to another house guest and say, like, you have to force them to do something or make them believe something. And if you can convince them, then, you know, you get the reward or the advantage or whatever that is. Just something interesting that gives it more of like a challenge within a challenge to actually be rewarded with that possible advantage.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting. And what I like about the wheel is that it's not time consuming, where it's just like, right, all right, you know, 30 seconds of spin the wheel. Okay, you got this, as opposed to, you know, there's so much of that we're missing in the game in those 42 minutes to spend a couple minutes on, you know, somebody doing some sort of a task or a challenge, that and to not make it feel contrived, where Big Brother is like a lot more of a silly show, where Survivor takes itself right. So seriously. So, you know, but again, we had that with Chris Noble. So I'm okay with doing it like once in a while, where he went to Ghost Island and he was playing this game and he was betting his vote. And I think that was fine how that played out. But to do it every single week, I don't know. It just felt like when Ghost Island worked the best for me was early in the season, where people went there and then they missed Tribal Council. It was almost like that they were going right there and they were getting immunity. And it was like, who do you want to send from the other group to go miss the Tribal Council? And I thought that was compelling, and it ended up paying a big dividend in that Chris Noble didn't get voted out, and ultimately, or didn't get Dominic voted out at that third Tribal Council. And I thought that was really good, but then they got away from doing that. And I'm not really sure why, but I felt like they actually, then two things happened at that point where they changed it up, where you didn't miss a Tribal Council anymore, where it was after the swap, and then Kellen went through that Ghost Island. And then it also turned into that you got to pick out of the rock. So it was like, okay, here's it's a random draw, and then randomly, you know, you are going to Ghost Island, and then randomly you get to play a game or not play a game, and randomly you pick a thing, and if you're lucky. So it was just like luck. And, you know, I hated picking the rock out of the bag, because it took the decisions away from the players. Whereas if anything, I would have liked to have seen, okay, pick a rock out of the bag. All right, you pick the rock. All right, Laurel, who do you say goes to Ghost Island? Like, give the decision to the person who pulled the rock, as opposed to like, oh, you drew a rock out of a bag, so you're the one to go. It just made it less interesting to me.
I agree. I didn't like that they just kind of allowed the other tribe to leave it up to random choice instead of forcing them to choose somebody either.
Yeah, just put more decisions in the hands of the players, because it's the kind of thing where it could create more friction. Like random and luck doesn't make people mad at each other. It's not looked at as, oh, I was, you know, vote for me in the end because I was the luckiest. So just take the things that, and I know I'm advocating for a wheel, but I'm just saying that that it's better than, you know, sometimes you have a chance to play a game, sometimes not. If you want to do it, give, you know, have giveaways for advantages, at least the wheel would be more exciting, I think. But just put more decisions in the hands of the players so that they can, you know, have more reasons to get mad at each other and fight.
Do you think they should have brought back more relics this season, more past idols or whatever.
I mean, I just feel like that, now you're just putting more, salt in there. Like, did we need, was the season missing more advantages? I don't think so. That was it. Like, if we say that the season was missing anything, I don't think it's that it, I wish.
Bring back your eight ball.
Well, it would be nice if they turn it into, in a future Ghost Island season, if they want to rent it. You know, it's back there on the, behind me. But if that's a, I don't know how many people would remember it, but if they want to turn that into an immunity idol, that's fine. Reverse the curse of the eight ball, please.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Ghost Island, the twist could have been a lot better.
They could have done more with it. They could have.
I liked when Chris got to play, had to risk the chance. You have one time, two times that if you, I liked that to make it more interesting than just smashing an urn and being like, whoops, you don't get a game.
Right. I mean, there were times where it worked well. And then there were other times where it was like that people were randomly sent there and then didn't get to play a game. And it was just like, well, why, why is this even a thing? There were weeks that it was just a forgotten thing where, okay, nobody's going to Ghost Island this week.
Do we know if there were times where nobody even went to Ghost Island or that just was not shown?
There was a couple of times where people did not go to Ghost Island. Specifically, I think that at the Split Tribal Council, nobody went to Ghost Island that week. And I'm trying to, I think also at the swap, one of the swaps, nobody went to Ghost Island. I think that the swap where
they just had random days where they just didn't send people to Ghost Island.
Yeah. I think there was two or three episodes where nobody went to Ghost Island. And then also at the, in the finale, nobody went to Ghost Island until everybody went to Ghost Island and, they just went there to go talk about, which ice bucket was Dominic going to put the votes in.
Right.
So I think that they could have used Ghost Island more productively. And I think that, I'm not a hater of the idea of Ghost Island, but I feel like that there was more that they could have done with it. And the things sometimes they did stuff with it that was like, well, this was a waste. Why did we yeah. spend the time on this when it was like, nothing happened.
Right. I agree. I think that they could have done, especially since Jeff kind of hyped it up so much.
Look, people like the relics. That was one of the things that that in Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers, I think people complained a lot more about there being so many idols in advantage, especially in the end game, so many idols and advantages in the game. I think that there were eight idols played in that season. There were a lot of idols and advantages in this game. People didn't complain as much that there were so many of them there because I think that people liked seeing the old things come back.
Yeah. I agree. And there it seemed at least like there was a few more things that were either timed, like you had to use it within two tribal councils
And they should do more of that.
That works better. Yeah.
So
they should.
I think it would, because I think that one of the things that was also a problem with this season was that you knew Wendell and Dominic, in addition to having fake idols, they both had real idols that were going to go until the final five. So at the final five tribal council, it was really just like, right. Okay, well, which one of these people are Dominic and Wendell going to pick to knock out here, where there was no chance of a flip. It was just going to be like, who are Dominic and Wendell going to decide to get rid of at the final five?
Right.
I think when Laurel doesn't flip at 7 or 8, I think that sort of adds to the frustration of like, okay, well, if those guys, if there will be a shot to get them, I think it would open things up more in terms of the outcome as opposed to it being so, much of a done deal because that they've got idols going down the stretch.
Yeah. Not having a tribal where everybody is up for elimination is definitely a miss opportunity. Yeah.
Every idol, but you have two tribal councils from the time that you find it. That's it.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see how that works.
And then it's I found an idol, but I don't know if I need it. We haven't talked about this a lot, and I look forward to getting into this with Dominic when we get a chance. But, Dominic had that legacy advantage, and he played it at 13. Yeah. And he really could have used it at 6.
I completely forgot about that, actually.
I think we all did. But if he has the legacy advantage at 6, then he doesn't have to do the whole thing with the fake immunity idol with Seabass that gets Sebastian really upset with him and other people on the jury potentially upset with him. So that could have been the difference in the game.
Right.
It's interesting.
Yeah. I'm surprised at how, you know, I was listening to some of Kellen's interview earlier today, and I'm surprised with how upset that they were over his theatrics. She explained it a little bit where she said that there were some things that weren't shown that he did, that I could understand, you know, but I would think that someone, you know, would get that it was just a move.
Well, it was a move, and it was a bluff also in that he wasn't even voting out Donathan at that tribal council, but they really, I don't know. It would be a good question to ask Donathan and Dominic about, you know, how upset everybody is. And did Dominic oversell that he was going to be, because he wants Sebastian voting for Donathan at the tribal council. So he may have really been overselling that, how much he was going to take out Donathan at that tribal council to get Seabass to not play his extra vote. And to, I forget if he knew that Sebastian, he did know Sebastian had the extra vote.
Sebastian's face that whole time was hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. And the final tribal council lost too. So, you know, there's still a lot to unpack. And, you know, that's the fun thing about these postseason interviews, that you get to find out some of these other little details.
How many are you planning on doing?
So I'd love to, you know, the ones that I definitely want to get. I still want to get to Dominic, Wendell, and Laurel. I want to get to those. And then, you know, I think that Michael and Donathan are certainly, you know, in play. Depends on, you know, how many times do you guys want to hear these times at the point where, you know, we get through a couple more and you guys are like, oh, these are great. Or like, okay, Rob, we get it. We don't need to keep hearing it over and over again. When are we getting to, you know, Mike Bloom talking about tribe flags? So
I like all the in-depth interviews. It's interesting to get, you know, people's perspectives on what they saw happened or what they perceived happened.
Yeah. I mean, so it's a lot of work. I do a lot of prep for them, but hopefully, you guys, it's worth it and it's a good listen.
Yeah. I love it. I enjoy it. I'm sure most everyone in here does.
Yeah.
I
mean, well, Matt, thank you so much.
Of course.
Yeah. Where are you calling from, Matt?
I'm in Jersey, but I was going to say, like Bryce said, you guys need to have live know-it-alls in Philly.
Yeah. Look, I think I think we could sell out Philly. I feel like that, the people, yeah, that I think that people from the New York and the East Coast would come to Philly. So,
I've tried coming to New York, but the problem is it's such a long commute for me, and to try and get there by 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then afterwards it'd be impossible to get home because they stop the trains after a certain time.
Okay. So, well, Philly might have to fight it out with Chicago for the next destination. I don't know if it's a wand off, if it's Survivor Jeopardy. I don't know what it is, but that might decide where the next stop is on the Know It Alls tour after New York in the fall.
I'll be there for sure.
Okay. All right, Matt, take care. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Rob. Have a good night.
All right. There you go. All right, boy. What are we like? Almost closing in on 2 hours here, and we're going. We're going along here. Okay. All right. Let's see. Well, I'm not ready to pass out yet. Let me talk to. All right, Connor's been on hold for a minute. Let's go to Connor. Connor, how are you?
Hi, Rob.
What's
going? Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I hate technology.
Why?
So.
Why?
Because I never do well on live Google Hangs. Just ask Max and Corinne from ATF. They're going to kill me for being on another podcast.
I think that they'll be very understanding. We have a nice relationship with ATF, and we have
I know you do.
many mutual listeners that call into both shows. So you'll be fine.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. You have good luck now. We're talking. What do you want to get into?
I just have a question in general. My question is, do you think themes dictate seasons so much? And do you think idols dictate gameplay? Because at least for me, my favorite season with themes aren't like the heroes, healers versus hustlers, but it's like the simpler ones with like Pearl Islands, the pirate theme. Like that works in my opinion. Or like Survivor China really wasn't a theme, but they based challenges based off like the area and had like rewards based off the area and stuff like that. Like the simpler themes. So do you think Survivor is taking themes a little bit too far. And do you think idols dictate the game? Because at least my favorite seasons, it's not the idols being played, but it's the people making the moves. So like Todd making moves in China, blindsiding John Robert, blindsiding James. It's not necessarily the idols making the moves, but it's the players themselves. And so do you think that too many idols affects the game where you can't really make a move as a player, but the idol is making the move for you? If that makes sense.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there. In terms of the themes making the season, that I think that what you have, like in a situation like with Pearl Islands, where you have a great iconic theme in terms of pirates, that's a theme that you could easily wrap your head around, but you also had really great players, and you had a guy who was like a pirate in Rupert and like a villain in Johnny Fairplay. So you had you had players that fit the theme, and a really exciting season, and everything really broke right there. In terms of China, I think we're starting to get into where, again, it's coming down to the players more so than the theme being Chinese culture. And, you know, they did some stuff with swords and fireworks and stuff like that. But that's not what made that season great. I think it's the characters that are coming into play. And in terms of with the idols getting involved, I think that you're right that it's so much focus on the idol and who has the idol. I think that that does come at the expense of some of the, you know, getting to know these characters and really falling in love with the character. So instead of seeing something, you know, funny, you know, that's happening of, you know, one of the players ate too much rice and has a stomach ache, and, you know, instead of seeing that, we're seeing, oh, who has the idol, and a conversation about something that more has to do with the vote as opposed to something that might have more to do with being a fun moment about the personality. So whereas the thing about where the idol is creates more intrigue and drama about who's going to ultimately get voted off, we probably feel a little less connected with the characters that we see on the show. And if we're sort of like drilling down to it's, you know, the characters that what is what makes the show great, then, you know, we're sort of like, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul to some degree.
Yeah.
If that wasn't too much of a rambling answer.
Oh, don't worry, it wasn't. I ramble all the time.
Yes. Okay. So maybe less idols might, you know, but again, people are complaining about the season was too predictable. So was it predictable because Wendell and Dominic had idols, or was it predictable because nobody, you know, the idols didn't get to the right people? And maybe if Laurel had an idol, would that have changed anything? So
I wish we could have seen more of her strategic game. That's what annoyed me too. Like, you saw her in confessionals, but I mean, it really annoys me when I see people judge, because you're not out there. You don't know what it's like. And from her perspective, I mean, she could have been playing a great game and it just wasn't shown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's why I'd love to do a long form interview with her and talk to her in terms of, you know, the different problems that she faced. And, you know, it's very easy to simplify it in, you know, 42 minutes of what happened on the show. But I'm sure that there is a deeper answer. And then just to speak to the issue with the idols that, I raised the specter of maybe, you know, if there were more idols, that would ultimately change things. I feel like I heard this said about something else, that if the solution to the problem causes the symptoms, that's how addiction is formed. So probably get less idols. You can't fix the problem with idols, with more idols.
I mean, I don't mind idols. I mean, you could have like three or four idols. I just think it's annoying that I feel like somebody finds it every single episode. It's like in China, it took 6 clues. Mm-hmm. Like, make it difficult to find, like, earn the actual idol.
Yeah.
Not that looking for it for hours isn't earning it. It's just right. Like, oh my God.
Right. I would like to see a little bit more of a churn with the idols. Like, I don't mind an idol being found where somebody has it, but then somebody has it and... I think that we had some tribal councils this season where I know a lot of people really loved the Stephanie Johnson episode, but I feel like that the fact that if there was an idol, I think that makes that a little bit more of a, you know, at least there is, you know, hope and not just written in the sand that maybe Malolo could figure something out. So I don't mind the idols being there, but I feel like that, you know, having a little bit more turnover in the idols, I think might also help to shake things. And then maybe you don't need as many in the game, where maybe there's only one or two idols in the game at any given time, but, you know, you have to use them or they expire and they get taken away.
Yeah. I just don't get it. I mean, it's
what
also
do you get, Corey?
I just don't get why there's so many idols. And it's really also interesting. I've noticed with casting, I'm not sure if you noticed this, because I've been trying to get on for like 3 years.
Yeah. And they don't want you?
No. Yeah. I don't understand why. I mean, I think it's because I'm too outspoken.
You're too outspoken.
I just say what's on my mind.
No, that's you might not be outspoken enough. They want people that say what's on their mind.
I do, but my opinions are really awful, like how I think plaid should be eliminated from fashion. No
what?
Well,
ho. Corey, we're losing you. Your connection is getting bad. What else?
How I'm a nutcase and I like Miley Cyrus, and how I'm a basketball manager who likes Miley Cyrus, judging people on fashion and cooking shows, really just messed up.
I mean, that those are certainly
weird
things, but I wouldn't say that's really outspoken.
And I'm a super, well, I just say with, I'm just a super fan. I really want to go on, but it's funny because I feel like casting in the beginning, they cast people based off, like, they cast just random people, but now I feel like they're casting in roles. Like, even for next season, like that Gabby person literally is like a Hannah clone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, hello, Hannah. So that's interesting with casting. I'm not sure if they've like changed it up or if it's like an archetype now rather than like an actual human.
Well, if I could give you one piece of advice on, you know, putting the tape together, I think as opposed to just having like a list of things that you like or don't like, which I think is, you know, nice to say, you know, really just try to drill down to how you would describe yourself at, you know, how would somebody else describe you in 4 or 5 words, you know, as opposed to
more, that'll take like 20 words.
Well, that's not the exercise. Get it down to a couple of words. And then as opposed to random things you like or don't like, you know, why, you know, that who are you? How do you see the world? And then these are the types of things. And if you have like anecdotes about how these different interests that you have gotten you into different, interactions with people that have been positive or negative, I think that stories are, you know, great things to tell them.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah. Well, very nice to talk to you.
Yeah, I really enjoy your podcast. Just did a Survivor Amazon rewatch, and I was pissed that you didn't win.
And me too. Me too, every time.
Yeah, well, thank you.
All right, well, Corey, have a great night. Connor, I apologize, Connor.
You're good, trust me. There are a bunch of people.
Corey's on hold, so I apologize about that.
Bye.
All right, take care, Connor. Bye. Okay, very, very embarrassing. See, I have Corey on the mind. Let me bring in Corey. Here he is. Wand off, superstar. Here's Corey B.
Hey.
Corey, how's it going?
Can you hear me all right?
Yes. I have to call you Connor to make it even.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, that's understandable. I would accept that.
Yes. Yes. How's it going?
Good. I'm actually chilling in New Jersey in a hotel room for work. So a little out of my element right now, actually. Okay. But
well, happy to have you here. Right. What's going on?
Not much. I actually was listening in on that question on Ghost Island a couple of people ago.
Yeah,
from Matt. And I actually wanted to, and I think also from New Jersey, so that's kind of cool. I just wanted to comment specifically on Ghost Island a little bit as well, a little bit overlapping into that, honestly. But a lot of that being, I think that a lot of the early consensus was that Ghost Island was very underutilized, and I think that kind of remained that way throughout the season. And actually what I wanted to suggest maybe as an improvement for the season would have been to incorporate Ghost Island more thematically, and I'm not sure why they didn't. So, for example, what I mean by that is, so tribal councils, for example. Why wasn't the tribal council set on Ghost Island, right? So why wasn't Jeff giving out torches at the beginning of the season that other people had used and saying the significance of that? And the snuffers each week could have been different, because I know that Jeff has mentioned that he keeps those from every season. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. This is kind of a vague idea, right? But I'm wondering, are there other ways like that that it could have been used beyond just introducing twists and having people go there to play a game to introduce it more to the audience?
It's interesting. I mean, it sounds cool. I don't know if it necessarily adds more to the season in terms of like it, you know, it's more flair, you know, it's more buttons, but are those the things that ultimately make us feel like that was a great season versus that was not as great of a season? You know, I think it's probably more about the cast and the gameplay ultimately. So I'm not, I don't dislike any of those things. The only thing I would say is that I thought that, maybe it was Jeff Pittman that said this on Twitter about how, you know, he feels bad for the Survivor Ghost Island urn never got final tribal council votes in it. So at the point where we start using more and more memorabilia from the past seasons, it sort of diminishes the value of the stuff that was from season 36. So it would be with like the torches, and I don't know, I know they sell them on eBay. So I don't know how much, like, it's like, okay, well now you have, you know, Libby's torch was really, Jonathan Penner's torch. And now, you know, what is it? So, I think, you know, it's cool to bring that stuff back. But I think that also at the same time, you're sort of like, you know, diminishing the uniqueness of the stuff that was used in this season.
Yeah. And I could definitely see that. And I think that ultimately, I totally agree that it doesn't necessarily affect the outcome and how we introduce the players. I just thought that, and maybe the perspective from my end was also because I listened to First One Out and I got this huge grandiose idea of what Ghost Island is, and then it's just barely there.
It wasn't
like,
well, hey, yeah.
Pick a bamboo thing, and then you're done. Oh, see you later. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah,
it wasn't much.
But I do agree. Right. And I don't know how much, you know, they necessarily, you know, shared with Josh in terms of the vision of like how it was going to play out on a week to week basis, as opposed to sort of like just like the elevator pitch on all of that. But in terms of like, why couldn't they have had tribal council at Ghost Island? I just think that because if people wanted to walk around and explore Ghost Island, I think that there may be like a lot of like production stuff that might be going on at tribal council construction wise. And it may, you know, have just not been conducive for, you know, to have somebody at Ghost Island and then have a tribal council, you know, going on simultaneously.
That's true. Yeah, no, that's fair. I guess I just have this vision in the back of my mind of, instead of someone just finding the extra vote, they just stumble upon the tribal council set and they see a parchment just sitting there.
They're like peering through the bushes like, oh,
that's right. That's right. That could be fun when Probst gets a little crazy with his ideas one day.
Yeah, somebody gets to maybe that, you know, that could be like a hidden, like it's a little Big Brother, but it's like, all right, you're going to have an advantage of you'll get to spy on tribal council through the wall and nobody will know you're there and you'll have this advantage. I mean, that's a fun thing to have, like one player got a, like, I could see that almost more in like Australian Survivor, where it's like one player got to go and like secretly watch the other tribes tribal council and nobody knew. And then they get to come back, and then that would be, I mean, that would be a cool advantage.
It could be like legitimizing the Spy Shack, actually.
Right. There's some sort of like a Spy Shack of, you know, basically that they would be, you know, there'd be like some little, like, you know, in the set, there's like one little space where they could like see through like a little peephole.
Right.
And overhear the whole tribal council and then go back to their tribe and talk about that. And then they would have no idea unless somebody blabbed at the merge.
That's true. Guys,
send this to Samoa.
All right. So what I really need to do, Rob, is whisper this at the finale to a 10-year-old and have him tell Jeff Probst. Yes. And then I think we'll be golden.
The next finale, let's mule in like a bunch of little kids. My kids are too small, but we need like, you know, 8 and 10-year-olds and like give them like all of our think tank ideas and then have them tell them to Jeff, like, oh my God, these kids are amazing. The kids have all the best ideas.
I think it'll be perfect. He won't even know it's coming.
Yeah. Okay. All right. This is two great ideas. Give kids our good ideas, and then Tribal Council Peep Show.
Right.
And it sounds a little too lascivious. I think we need a better name.
Right. Yeah. Maybe a little bit better. We can workshop it though. I think that we'll figure something out.
Yeah. Okay. Corey, well, great hearing from you. Good luck at the work meeting.
Thank you. Okay. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care, buddy. Bye.
You too.
Bye. All right. Let's bounce around a little bit more. Let's talk to, all right, Stephanie, are you ready? Okay. Here is Stephanie. Yes.
Hello?
Stephanie, how are you?
Good, Rob. How are you?
Very good. What's going on?
I just wanted to say hello from Canada.
Yes. Hello. Hello from America.
And I'm a big Wandoff stan. I fast forward to the Wandoff and then go backwards, but that's okay.
Yes.
And okay. Haters back off about that.
Yes. Do you have a favorite from the Wandoff?
No, I like everybody. They're all great. Yeah, all
it would talented. Be arbitrary and reductive to rank the Wandoff artists.
I'm going to pull a Stephen Fishback right here and say, I cannot choose. Do not make me.
Okay. I won't make you. I learned my lesson. I'm not going to hold anybody's feet to the fire on ranking things.
Perfect. Thanks so much.
Okay.
So what's going on? My question is about the jury management. I don't know if you've talked about it yet.
No, I don't think, not too much.
Okay, perfect. I know right now with Big Brother just going past and Survivor, it kind of seemed like a theme where like jury management is really important.
Yes.
And the last couple of losers of Big Brother, unfortunately, like the front runners lost because of their jury management. So is that like, would you suggest going forward that important to, you know, make sure you, as you're going out, talk to people, you know, have their...
We touched on this a little bit earlier. I think it was like the second call that we did, talking about the, you know, the similarities between, you know, how people viewed the Big Brother Canada jury and then this jury. But in terms of like managing the jury, I think it's a very important thing to do. But I don't know, we saw Johnny do that to some degree with people that came out of the game, and Taryn documented that well, where people like Ryan and Marin, who didn't end up on the jury, were like, oh, I would have definitely voted for Johnny to win. But I don't know on Survivor.
And Kara said that to Maddie when she was going out. She was kind of like giving her points about like, this is what I did in my game. Make sure they know what I did.
But I'm not sure necessarily if that is a thing on Survivor, where I don't know if I've talked to a lot of Survivor contestants where they talk about how, you know, so-and-so really put in a lot of time with me. Because in Big Brother, you have a week where Johnny might know, hey, Marin's going home this week. I better really put in a lot of work with Marin and really try to... But in Survivor, you know, you have these 2 and 3 day cycles where, you know, it's not necessarily as much of a foregone conclusion. I think there's a lot more blindsides that happen on Survivor. So... like, let's say going back to, you know, let's say Dominic was going to spend a lot of time working on Kellen. It's maybe to some degree that Wendell did do that in terms of like he took Angela and Sebastian on that on the reward with him at final six, which certainly made Laurel upset. But then he gave the necklace to Laurel at the final five. So I think that Wendell did do more of those things. I think it just would be tougher to do on Survivor because you have the shorter amount of time and then there's just more blindsides. Whereas I think that a person on Big Brother is probably, you know, may know they're going home in 5 days and be more inclined to, you know, hear things out as opposed to somebody on Survivor who has more of a chance to save themselves in Survivor. Up until the last second, you're sort of scrambling to maybe you could flip it at Tribal Council, whereas on Big Brother, sometimes it's more of a foregone conclusion. Okay, I'm going home on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, Wendell was telling Chelsea, like, oh, I made you that coffee area. You know, oh, I know you like to cook, so I made you that little rack. You know, I think those little gestures are important, especially with Dom and Meat Shield, and he's going and maybe being a little bit more abrasive to everybody. Not that I don't know if he really was, but, you know, he's rubbing people maybe the wrong way, whereas your little gestures can go a long way, especially being away from family, being, you know, stranded, not being doing your regular things, you know, that little gesture here and there, like, oh, I caught you a fish, or, oh, I went and got a coconut for you. Like,
But Wendell doing those things for Chelsea in the pre-merge, I think carries a lot more weight than say necessarily like the day she's going home being, you know, sucking up to her where I think it's a lot more transparent when that person knows they're going home. And I think that was really spoke to what Johnny was able to do, is sort of to get like people going out the door turned around on him, where maybe they didn't love him as much, as opposed to Wendell. It seemed like for 39 days he was working, you know, on people in terms of his social game. And I think that's one of the reasons why he won.
Well, it might have worked out for Dom if when he wrote it out, put Wendell to the fire. If he lost to the fire, Wendell could be backing him up all his moves, saying, look, I was there with him every step of the way. This is what it is, because I know exactly plan A, plan B, plan C. I can tell you exactly what happened. So that in that case, maybe that would be a great idea. Like if you're taking your two down, then you want to get rid of them right there at the end. So that way he can, or maybe
you're saying that if Dominic would have taken Wendell into the fire making challenge to knock him out there.
Yeah. Or knock him out. Maybe final five would have been better, because that way he had more time to talk to the jury about like every single move he made. Like obviously he would have won probably hands down in this case, but like in another case, if someone went down to the end.
The problems there were, you know, Wendell not only won immunity at final five, had an immunity idol at final five. And then also, you know, you run the risk of, I got a lot of questions from people. I have a lot of emails that people wrote in before this show over the last couple of days. Why didn't Dominic vote out Wendell at the final six? Why didn't Wendell vote out Dominic at the final six? It seems like that Wendell would have had a straight shot at this thing. He knew that Dominic was bluffing. Why didn't he take him out at the final six? And it's a great question for both of those guys. But you wonder, would Dominic have gone to the jury and said, hey, this guy's a real scumbag. You know, we had a deal to go to the end, and then he, you know, we had a deal to four and, he turned me. And you know what? He never really liked any of you guys. It's a great question for Wendell.
Perfect. I can't wait to hear all the podcasts. Thank you so much, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to talk to you.
Awesome. Have a good night. See ya.
All right. Take care, Steph. Bye. Okay. All right. Let's go. Sebastian in Canada.
Hi.
Sebastian, how are you? Seabass.
Good. Yes, first of all, yesterday I was so nervous to call for the first time. So
yes, we spoke on the Patreon cast yesterday for anybody who's confused. Yeah, I missed the show yesterday. Yes.
Yes, I wasn't prepared. So it just being a mess and chaotic. So this time I have a question prepared.
No problem.
And the question is about the edit that Chelsea got this season.
Yes.
And I wonder
what edit.
But do Survivor need to go back to 18 people in the cast? Because I don't remember having someone having a purple edit with 18 person. I think it's like a loss to have 20 and or have 2-3 people like Angela and Chelsea being having no airtime and having a edit that is just about Dominic and Wendell.
It's a good point. I don't think that Survivor should do 20 people unless it's an all-star cast. I think 18 is the better number. But the problem that you run into is that then you get into a gender imbalance with if you want to do two tribes, because like we saw in San Juan del Sur, I think, which had 18 people. If you do 9 men and 9 women on the season, sure, that'll work in Survivor Vanuatu. But if you're not dividing the tribes by gender, you're going to end up in a scenario where one tribe has 5 men and 4 women, and one tribe has 4 women and 5 men. And if you want to try to match up, I mean, you would have to try to figure out a way to do it where you would have some of your more athletic women on one tribe with the less athletic men to try to make it even. But I think that, you know, Survivor wants to come in and try to keep, you know, the gender balance, you know, the same, whether it's 4-4 or 5-5 or 3-3, whatever it is. And so you run into problems that way. Again, I don't think I'd rather figure that out than try to figure out 20 people. I mean, they had that bad experience in Koh Rong, where they had 3 people get medevaced in the 18-person season, and it really threw a monkey wrench into the numbers. But since then, I don't think we've had any medical evacuations, I'm missing.
No, I don't think so.
Since Koh Rong. So, I don't know. But Survivor, whatever, for whatever reason, they like to have 20 people, and they like to, you know, be able to, if somebody wants to quit or if somebody wants to have the, you know, or if somebody has to leave the game from medical, it's not going to affect their numbers too much.
But should they do a better casting job for people like Angela and Chelsea? Because we have Seabass that, yeah, we didn't see a lot of him, but most of the time that we saw him, it was for some funny confessional.
Right.
So I get him, but I don't get why we have zero time for Angela and boom, she's there for two episodes. And
right. You know, I don't want to necessarily say, you know, casting did a bad job with Chelsea or with Angela, because you don't know what they were like in the room. Sometimes somebody is one way, you know, in the casting room, and then sometimes they get to the island and they shut down, or they're totally different, or whatever the reason. And, you know, Laurel had said, Angela was so funny. I can't believe they didn't put any of her stuff on the show. She was so
yeah.
It's hard to say necessarily that it was a casting miss, but for whatever reason, they just either they might have been bad at confessional. They might not have been able to, you know, tell their story in a succinct way. So there's no real way to be able to tell whatever the reason was. But I do think that having less people would be a good solution in terms of trying to fix that, but it does not seem like that's going to be a thing that happens anytime soon.
Okay, yeah, I understand now. I didn't have another question. I just want to say hi and ask my question. So I want to leave the room to let other people ask some questions.
Well, thank you. Yes, because we have to have we don't want anybody to have a purple edit tonight.
Yeah.
But everybody have a good amount of airtime, and I don't want casting to think that we did a bad job. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah. Well, especially nice to talk to you again. Take care, buddy.
Bye. Take care. Bye.
Okay. All right. Abby, why'd you try it without the headphones? Try without take the headphones out. See if that. How about
can
now?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to try this. Can you hear me on this too?
No, I hear you.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So, what's going on with you?
Not much. I finally got out of school and I am among the land of the living. It's been a busy, busy spring and I'm glad to be done with school.
You're like me with the Survivor season.
I tell you what, it was a whirlwind. I had a big community project I was in charge of. And
what'd you do?
Well, we live in a historic town. And so we were trying, a lot of people complain that the town is going downhill. So we made this big push to beautify it with flowers, but that was just the beginning of what we did. I had no idea what it was gonna take, and we're just now coming into getting it all finished up. So I'm finally breathing again.
Okay, well, it sounds like a worthwhile project.
Well, it is, and I'm really excited to do it. I love my town. I grew up here, and Travis and I came back after being gone for about 10 years. It's a great place to raise a family. It's a small town, and so I love it, but I was in charge of pretty much everything. So I went to every city meeting you can imagine and pushed it through. And now I'm in charge of making it happen. So that's a lot of pressure.
All right. Well, sounds great. So what's going on? What do you want to talk about with Survivor?
Well, really, not much. I wanted to say hi, and I don't know if you're, are you talking about the next season yet?
Well, I'll talk about it. What do you want to get into?
Well, I just heard that there was a patron that was on season 37. Of course, we had Laurel. And so I was just wondering if you knew that person, and then if you knew if there were other patrons that were on that season as well, the upcoming one.
No, that I only know of the one so far. And, you know, it's always exciting to have somebody, people that listen to the podcast. And you know, I haven't had any interaction with the, you know, Survivor 37 contestants, but it's always nice to, you know, when, you know, we have the preseason content when, you know, and Josh has interviews with people to hear who was a listener to the podcast, who was aware of the podcast. You know, it's always a thrill for me to have people who have listened to the work that I've done then go and compete on the show and then come back and say, Rob, you really screwed me. You know, I listened to you and it did not help me one bit.
Yeah. And so I can't remember this guy's name. Is it Nick or something?
Yes.
Okay. And do you know him or?
That I've I'm familiar with him, and he's called into the patron cast a couple times. So it's very exciting.
Okay. All right. Well, excellent. Well, like I said, I just wanted to say, hey, it's been a while since I've been on a Facebook Friday or any other thing. It always seems to happen at the you know, when I can't make it. So I was going to pop on and say hi. Travis is off to Europe. And then my daughter and I are headed to South America for 5 weeks in a couple weeks. So we're getting stuff ready for that.
Okay. Well, that's a whirlwind, Abby.
I know. We're busy.
Okay. All right. Well, best to Travis and good luck on the whole South American endeavor.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We're gonna hone up her Spanish, and she'll be speaking Spanish fluently when she gets back, I hope so. Okay.
Well, that's immersion.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Rob. Good talking to you.
All right, take care, Abby. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. All right. Okay, let's try. Okay, we had such good luck with Abby that time. Let's try Kristen and then Brent the Shower Man to close this out. Okay, Kristen.
Am I a robot?
No, you're good.
Awesome.
Okay. Yes.
All right.
What's going on?
This is like for non-patrons too.
There's this is we're on the Facebook page.
All right. I got to give my thing about I've been listening to you for years, and this is my first Survivor season with you. And if you are listening to this, you need to become a patron. It is incredible. Really enhanced my season.
Thank you so much. Very, very sweet, Kristen.
But also it got me thinking, Mike Bloom did a podcast. I think his name is Antonio Mazzaro. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
So he went, completely no social media, no podcast.
Right. Well, Antonio has been a long time, part of RHAP. And I think he felt like, maybe he was getting Survivor overload. And so he sort of decided to do no podcasts, no blogs, no nothing, no Reddit. And then, was on the B&B.
Yes. So I would love to hear his feedback from that experience. Oh,
that would be that would be interesting.
When you were talking to somebody, several people back about not being able, I guess it was the guy who was watching with his casual friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not being able to watch it without the edit in mind is how I watch it now. And so I would be curious to hear his
feedback. You are able to watch it without thinking about the edit.
No, I can't.
Oh, you can't. Yeah. It's hard to turn it off.
Yeah. And it's now going to be even worse. Like I can't imagine like, now that I know the people who make the Wandoff songs and some of the people who call
why
in,
will the Wandoff throw you off?
Just because I'll be thinking, what tune is
what Wandoffs are people gonna make?
Corey B gonna put this to?
Yeah.
So I'd be curious to hear his thoughts on a feedback show or something in the off season.
Yeah. That's a good
that's
point.
That's really it.
Yeah.
And also, I fully support a Wandoff competition that would allow Chicago or Philly to be the, like, you the know, next. They can compete for their choice city.
What would be better for you, Philly?
Yes, Philly.
Okay.
I think that's you know what I'm just going to say? I think that's a really, first you got, you owe Bryce
yes.
a visit.
Yes.
Yes. He's been looking forward to you.
Mm-hmm.
And Wendell... right out of Philly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like locked in, and it's a good middle place for everyone on the East Coast.
Yes. But the people in Chicago say, that's a good middle place for everybody in the country.
That is true. I'm just going to throw it out there.
Okay. It's out there. It's out there. I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
Okay.
And I think Bryce is going to, you know,
the next step needs to be somebody needs to like be saying like, hey, how about this venue? How about the, you know, that needs to be, you know, where we go from here. Because we're just
Amanda will get on that.
We're just pie in the sky right now. But if people start talking about logistics and this would be a good place, then we're, you know, get the ball rolling.
All right. Well, go ahead and close out with Brent.
Okay.
So.
All right. Take care, Kristen.
Bye.
Okay. We may have one other caller besides Brent. We may have somebody else that we want to get to. Okay. All right. Here is Brent the Shower Man. Here he is. Yes.
Hey, Rob.
Brent, what's going on?
Hey. Hey, not much. I'm glad that I'm not the closer. That's a ton of pressure.
It'd be a lot of pressure.
You got to have somebody else. You got.
Yeah. We'll see if he hangs up.
How you doing? This is what, 6.5 hours of shows?
I did do a 4-hour patron cast last night.
Yeah, you haven't talked about that yet?
Not really. A couple people called in that were on the patron cast and referenced it. But yeah, it was a long podcast with the patrons.
You hanging in there?
Look, the time, this, I really enjoy getting to do this, and the time goes by very quickly. So as long as I going to the bathroom right before this, and I try not to drink a lot of liquid, probably too much information there. But, you know, if you guys want to talk to me, I'm always happy to do it.
Yeah. Well, and it's fun. You're on your actual podcast page. My friends just texted me, who's not a patron, and was like, hey, we're watching, no pressure.
Okay.
So this is not just a patron show. So shout out Matt and Alan who are watching right now.
What did Chris Noble say? This is a free show?
This is a free show. This isn't pay-per-view. It's a free show.
That's right. That's right. This isn't Patreon. So, it's a free show.
This is kind of inspired by something that the Mike and Liana and Shannon said on the B&B. But they were saying that the last two seasons, they were kind of comparing the two seasons. They said the pre-merge of this season.
Yeah.
And then the post-merge of Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, and then the finale of Ghost Island. Like if you mash those up, those would be the best season.
Yeah.
Is that, do you agree with that? Have
100%,
you
130%. And I really am. I'm higher on Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers than most, especially the stuff from the post merge. I really did enjoy that season. I think you had so much, like, I think it's in some ways the opposite of this season where I think that probably, you know, Dominic and Wendell, I think if you were going to rank all of those players, I think you probably have, you know, Dominic and Wendell are probably 1-2, and then Ben, Chrissy, probably, you know, 3-4, and maybe even, like, you know, you get into like Devin and it would be an interesting podcast, a draft of like the, you know, ranking the players from those two seasons combined. But you had like going in like the final seven of that season, you could make a case that just about everybody there could potentially have a shot at that thing. Whereas it was less likely when you look at the final seven or eight people from this season. So that one felt more wide open in terms of.
That's what I wanted to say, because I really think specifically the finale, I really liked the HHH finale. And I know, like, if you subscribe to the fact that it was rigged, I guess there's no convincing you, but.
If you feel like finale, it was rigged,
I can't help you if that's what you think, but. Honestly, that, I mean, Ben's run, if you think that it was all like above board, it was incredible. And to work that hard to find idols, I think that there was so much to that finale. And like you said, definitely everybody in the finale had a legitimate shot. Devin Pinto, who I forgot about, you know, was a fire challenge away from potentially probably winning that game. And I just think there's a lot more to it. And so do you think that history will remember Ghost Island as the better season by far, or how do you think they'll rank?
I think history will remember Ghost Island as the better of the two. I don't know necessarily on like, and I love the Survivor 35 people, but I don't know necessarily what Survivor 35 has going in its favor in terms of history really being the, you know, who will be, you know, making that case of Survivor? Now, maybe does a player from Survivor 35, or a couple of them come back and play in other seasons where then people look back at the original season more fondly. But I'm not sure necessarily what the selling point is for people, like for somebody to say like, oh my God, 35 is so great because blah, blah, blah. But you know, I am a fan.
I think too, I mean, this may be hard to say for sure, but if this finale doesn't have a tie, where does it rank? Because I think that there was some fun stuff in the finale before the tie, but the tie really,
if it's like a football game where, you know, that it's the second half was really boring, but then the last 2 minutes were really crazy. So I think that you tend to remember the last 2 minutes because it was, you know, such an exciting finish.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's just, you know, that there was the tie, or that, you know, Dom and Wendell were such a fun pairing throughout the season, or if people are generally not a fan of Ben because he was just found 5 million idols. But I don't know. I don't know why I came on here and was just like the fanboy for season 35. But I think I I rank season 35's finale higher than most people would, and then that I rank this most recent finale lower than most people would. So
why?
I
just why are you lower on this season's finale?
I don't know. I just think that the tie was exciting, but at the same time, as soon as you read the votes, you knew what it was going to be. And so it was exciting because it was so unprecedented and iconic, but I didn't see it as something. And then you know that Laurel's going to cast the vote. And so maybe that's just, I think you said this on a show, like maybe a casual fan didn't know that there was going to be a tie coming.
Well, I think that the casual fan did not even remember how the tiebreak rule works. Again, I always lean on my mom as being like the voice of the casual fan, because I talked to her about it. She was like, and then it was a tie and I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know how they were going to figure that out. So I was like, Mom, do you remember they talked about that? She's like, no.
Yeah. And they didn't say, good for them. They didn't say anything leading into it or like, remind people at all. Like yeah,
previously on Survivor, or, yeah. Jeff Probst talked about the tiebreak rule in the season 34 finale.
I just think that beyond what this finale brought or didn't bring, I think that I overestimate or overvalue what season 35's finale was. I just thought it was so exciting. And then to come out the first fire making twist, I know people didn't think it was the most fair thing.
And, Lisa, and you were there in person for 35, right?
I was at the finale for 35.
And what about 36?
I was not.
Okay. Maybe that's it. Maybe that could You're be, right. you know, sort no. of like your perspective on it.
It definitely could be, because it's different to be in the room with the crowd, but that's just my opinion. And you're right. It might be slanted by where I was physically watching those season finales.
Look, and everybody gets to, you know, do their own, everybody gets to come down with their own rankings. So the only time I come down on people is when they say they can't rank things. If you can do your own rankings, that's fine. You could be right or wrong, whatever. But if you're like, I can't do it.
Anyone can have their own opinion, but you have to have an opinion.
If you care, if you care, unless your opinion is, I don't, you know, I'm not interested. I don't care. But if you care, you should be able to have an opinion.
I'm not saying the last two seasons were like Dom and Wendell, like unrankable. I was just thinking as we closed out these last two seasons that, what were the similarities? What were the differences? Who would rank what higher? And, I just think it's an interesting thing to think about as these two seasons have come and gone.
Okay. All right. So. Right. Talk to you soon. Okay.
All right. Talk to you later, Rob.
All right. And now, all right, here he is to close it out. Here is the great Will from America. William.
That's me.
How are you?
I'm great.
I mentioned you earlier.
When? Why?
I talked about your tweet about how that the winning the final three advantage or the final three immunity is was not always considered an advantage.
That's right. It's always been, man, since season one.
I said that was a good point.
Yeah. Thank you, Rob. That's my one good point of the year. So.
No. I'm sure there was something else. Will, what's going on?
Not much. You know, I just joined this like 10 minutes ago. I didn't know it was happening.
All right. You want to reset everything we talked about from the top?
Just recap the whole podcast for me, please. All right. Recap.
So we started the podcast and then I told everybody to call in and I talked with Kenneth. So what's going on? What's going on, Will?
Not much. I mean, I just got back from seeing the Ruth Bader Ginsburg documentary, and that was pretty cool.
Is this your first movie review of the summer?
No.
Yes.
Anyways, I asked the chat what I should ask you, because I don't know what's going on.
Yes, what they said. And
Adam B. Katz, not Adam B. Dogs, asked me to ask you about gender inequality in Idol Finds. So yeah. Brent Wagamot was talking about that on the LFC.
Yes. I talked about it with Kellen a little bit. You know, I definitely, it's one of those things where it's like, I get the numbers, but what is, like, I don't know necessarily what the solution is, like, you know, I would love to see like a breakdown of like, are there so many guys that like are multiple idol finders? Like, I'd love to see the list broken down by a number of specific people that find idols. Cause I feel like it's, you have definitely like, have men that have found, multiple idols. But is it is it necessarily because of the you know, that men are able to go out and look for firewood without question, and if a woman was to do that, or a woman traditionally isn't going out and getting a lot of firewood, is that an oversimplification of all of this? And, you know, we saw Lauren Rimmer find idols and advantages last season, and Andrea, you know, has been, you know, has found idols in her time. So I don't know.
Yeah,
the numbers are definitely skewed in favor of the men, but is that because the idol, like looking for the idol, is typically more of an aggressive move that a man would make, or is there a problem with how where Survivor is hiding the idols? RC found an idol. I'm just thinking, like, off the top of my head, Sandra found an idol. So it's not necessarily that you need to be, you know, have this great amount of physical strength where we're hiding them, where out in the middle of, like, the, you know, in the ocean, where only somebody who's spearfishing is going to find the idol. So I don't think that the idols or the clues are hidden places that necessarily favor men over women. So, you know, I'd love to find out more from women survivors who feel like, you know, I did feel like I couldn't go out and look for the idol because, you know, people would think that it was suspicious that I got up, but it wasn't as suspicious. I see Fishback will tell you people thought it was plenty suspicious when he got up to look for the idol.
Yeah.
So look, I'd love to weigh in on this, but, you know, I don't have a, you know, a hot take on it. And if, yeah, you know, I'd love to, you know, ask the question to people that are smarter than me and, you know, people that have, you know, a good opinion on it. But I just say, it's the numbers don't lie, but what, you know, is it something that, like, what needs to be done to correct it?
Yeah. I mean, we're probably, like, not the best people to be talking about it, you know, two white guys.
Yeah. I mean, if, like, it's definitely the issue has been raised. And if, you know, if people that have a good answer, you know, have a take on it, you know, let's try to figure it out. But, I think that it may speak to the style of play more so than there being, that's what I think it is more. I think that men tend to go out and be more willing to make the aggressive move early of, hey, I need to go out and look for an idol right now, as opposed to that. I think there are less female players that come into the game and say, I think women are more focused, at the risk of generalizing, come in and say, I need to focus on my social bonds more so than the male player who may be more prone to say, I need to go out and find an idol because, you know, that's going to really help me in this game.
Yeah, I think part of it has to do with casting. You know, I think casting generally puts a lot more aggressive males on the show, which has been talked about a lot. And they're always looking for, like, the next Tony type, and also leading by example, sort of. So they're not, you know, you don't see a lot of girls saying, like, you know, I'm going to play like Russell Hance, I'm going to play like Tony, I'm going to find idols, because they don't see themselves in those guys. They don't see, like, a lot of women, like, searching for idols on the show. And I feel like that could have a pretty big part in it as well.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting in terms of, like, advantages as well, where, you know, we've seen different female players, like, you know, find advantages or go for advantages. So it's always, you know, interesting to get into the gender stuff, but I don't have a great answer.
Yeah. Well, on a lighter note, I wanted to ask you, what was your favorite podcast you did this season?
That's a really good question. Let me think, in terms of, the Bryce podcast. I mean, that might be, like, a little bit of an easy answer, but, That was a really good one. And, you know, I always get to enjoy doing the voicemails, but the ones in the studio are always, you know, really fun for me also. You know, the ones where it's just, like, the time flies by, I think that, maybe one that, got overlooked was, Jessica. I thought that was just very effortless to do, where, the ones where it's like, I don't have to like in my head be like, okay, what else? You know, where it's just like very effortless to, you know, just to keep going from one to another, one topic to another. Those are the ones that I really, enjoy.
Yeah. Jessica Figueroa is just the best.
You really like the Figgy one?
Yeah, that's what you're talking about, right?
I'm thinking about Jessica Johnston.
Okay.
But
Figgy was fine too.
You know,
it's almost as good as her podcast with Troy Zan.
So. Yes. You know, it's hard for me to get feedback because, you know, the people that, you know, the negative or the people that are the most exuberant are always the loudest. So, you know, I wish there was like a good way to be able to like have like, you know, like a Rotten Tomatoes score of people that listen to the podcast of like, oh, people thought this one was a 78%. This one was a 23%. Yeah.
That's the next level, Robin. Podcast exit polling.
Exit polling. Yes. Yeah. So. Maybe Tabulator can help me out. What do you have lined up for the summer?
Well, first I was going to say you answered wrong. The best podcast is this one right here.
This one. Thank you.
Yeah. Come on.
Okay.
You got it all wrong.
Well,
I got lined up for the summer though, you know, I'm studying for the CPA right now, which is really fun. I'm in like a CPA study program. That's really cool. I'm going to the beach next week though.
Wow.
I'm actually going to try Beachbody on demand.
Are you really?
Yeah. No, I'm totally serious.
Yeah. I mean,
I heard the ad before the
Helen podcast. What do you have to lose?
Yeah, a lot of weight. That's what.
Yeah. Text the code ROB to 303030. Get a free trial.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Look, you know that for me to go to the gym, I mean, you don't need the commercial, but it's very convenient.
Yeah, I just want to be a hunk like you, Rob.
That's well, come on, work for many, many years to get to this point. So, Will, what's the hashtag today?
The hashtag, oh man,
gender inequality.
Gender inequality. That's the most fun hashtag. Let's hear those suggestions from the chat.
Yeah, my chat is frozen, so you have me at a disadvantage. Right. Of course, I will have News AF coming up on Thursday on RHAP with Tyson and with Danny. And then we will have, I'll get more into some other, I have another Survivor postseason interview that I hope to have for you guys early next week. So you don't want to jinx it.
Wow. A lot going on
as usual, Will. Okay.
The hashtag, I haven't got any suggestions from the chat because they're all losers.
Yeah.
So our hashtag is hashtag Rob the Hunk.
A very popular hashtag.
Very popular.
Maybe less fun than gender inequality.
Maybe.
Yep.
It's right there.
All right. Well, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Always.
Yes. Okay. Everybody, for the record, if you closed in on almost 3 hours of this, really, I commend you. Thank you. Thank you so much for all of the attention listening to this. And hopefully we have a lot more fun for you guys this summer on RHAP. And if you like doing stuff like this, or if you want to be on one of these calls, we're doing this every single week in the Rob's Podcast patron group. Go to robswebsite.com/patron to find out more. Of course, follow Will from America on Twitter. Will, what's the Twitter handle?
@WillFromAmerica.
@WillFromAmerica.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good one, everybody. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Hold on, we're still on. Will, don't say anything inappropriate yet.
Shape of Water.
Hold on, no.